programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Guerrillas fired rockets at the headquarters of the U.S.-led administration in central Baghdad on Tuesday, and loudspeakers ordered personnel on the compound to take cover as explosions echoed across the Iraqi capital. Sirens wailed, flares lit up the night sky, and U.S. helicopters clattered overhead. A spokesman for the 1st Armored Division, which patrols Baghdad, said at least two rockets had been fired. One crashed through the roof of an empty apartment building near the coalition compound, and another landed near a bus station. There were no reports of U.S. soldiers being injured or of civilian casualties. The Pentagon's plan for replacing the 130,000 American troops in Iraq with a fresh contingent early next year will shrink the force by 20%, but it will place more of the combat burden on the National Guard and Reserve. If carried out as planned, the switch-out will result in a more mobile force, perhaps better suited to the guerrilla-style war that is taking a sobering toll in U.S. deaths and injuries. The Army is calling on the National Guard and Reserve to contribute more next year, and not just in supporting roles. Three Guard infantry brigades will be there, of which at least two will see combat. Civil rights groups complained Tuesday that police at last week's trade talks in Miami abused protesters, some senior citizens, by arresting them without cause and denying them restrooms, water, and phones. Meanwhile, the National Steelworkers Union called for a congressional investigation and the removal of Miami Police Chief John Timoney over the treatment of its members during the protest, and several groups said they will sue the city. The union sent a letter to congressional leaders late Monday criticizing police. The letter also criticized the use of federal money, $8.5 million was allocated, for Miami's security cost, calling it money for homeland repression. More IE American Network news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal, some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A new turkey and gravy soda tastes, well, pretty much like you would imagine, but that's not stopping people from buying it. The liquid's ominous, murky brown color accurately warns consumers about the taste, a mix of sweet caramel and savory lard. The manufacturer of the so-called soda suggested a retail price of 99 cents, but a few entrepreneurs are selling theirs on eBay.com. By Tuesday, the bidding was up to $63 for a two-bottle set. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information,
John
visit
IEAmericaRadio.com. One-day sale happening this Friday, November 28th. Get a five-piece wooden tray table set with natural finish for only $19.99. Or pick up a three-pack of GE 28-inch lighted candy canes, free after $4.99 mail-in rebate. Find great deals like these at Ace's One-Day Sale. Doors open at 7 a.m., so make plans to shop early. Ace, the helpful place. Quantities may be limited and are available at participating Ace stores. Rebates void in Connecticut.
If insanity could be packaged, Monsanto would surely own the patent. This biotech giant is insanely manipulating the genetics of our world's food supply without long-term testing of how these frankenfoods will affect human health or our environment. Monsanto maniacally pushes these products without even informing consumers that the very DNA of the foodstuffs they're eating has been artificially altered in its corporate laboratories, literally using us as its guinea pigs. And, like a foam-at-the-mouth mad dog, Monsanto attacks anyone who dares get in the way of its genetic profiteering. Oakhurst Dairy in Portland, Maine has seen Monsanto's madness in action. It's a small milk processor that tries to do business the old-fashioned way, giving consumers what they want, or, in this case, not giving consumers what they don't want, which is milk laced with Monsanto's artificial growth hormone, which has been linked to causing everything from premature puberty in children to health problems in cows injected with it. Overwhelmingly, consumers say they don't want this stuff in their milk, so Oakhurst Dairy started paying dairy farmers a premium for milk that's certified to be free of it. Oakhurst proudly labels its jugs with this promise: no artificial growth hormones. Enter the raw nuttiness of Monsanto, which has now sued Oakhurst, claiming that its label deceives consumers by making them think that the pure milk is healthier than milk with Monsanto's hormones. In fact, all Oakhurst is doing is letting customers know what's not in their product, so customers can make up their own minds which milk to buy. As Oakhurst president puts it, we're in the business of marketing milk, not Monsanto's drugs. Besides, he says, the world seems a little bit discombobulated when someone attempts to prohibit you from doing the right thing. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop Monsanto, call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
What do you think I like about commuting with nature as much as I do? Being on the tractor as much time as I do, or spending time with the animals.
Spitting diesel into the ozone layer. You're at one with nature.
You have meddled with the primal forces of nature, and you will atone.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
Greetings, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in the American way from coast to coast. Welcome to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Today, day 135 in the search for the senior administration official who committed treason. Day 289 in the search for weapons of mass destruction. Day 775 in the search for the person who dropped anthrax on Tom Daschle and our congressman, or our senator here from Vermont, Pat Leahy, just as they were beginning to consider the Patriot Bill. And day 798 in the search for Osama bin Laden. Who needs burglars to bug Democrats? Now, you know, we're going to get into this in our third hour. Has the ghost of Richard Nixon taken over George W.? An interesting question raised yesterday or the day before in the Washington Post, but yesterday, the Senate Judiciary Committee Chairman Orrin Hatch put one of his staffers on paid leave for hacking into, apparently, the computers of Senators Dick Durbin and Edward Kennedy, and then leaking their internal political documents to the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Times. This from, several different news sources. SFGate.com is the one that's got probably the shortest, tightest story on it. Remarkable. Remarkable. Anyhow, there's a lot to talk about today, and we have a guest in this hour and a guest in our next hour. Next hour it'll be Ambassador Mark Palmer. And then in our third hour we're going to get into these news of the day. But I do want to, and one other thing I wanted to mention, Representative Rush Holt's bill, H.R. 2239. We've discussed that on this program. In fact, Representative Holt was on the program. A final push, you know, contact your congressman. The telephone number for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Senate, the main switchboard number, area code 202-224-3121. And Rush Holt's bill, 2239, H.R. 2239, which would require a voter-verified paper trail for those who are paranoid about computers recording votes. In this hour, Dr. Matthew Spaulding is with us. Dr. Spaulding is an expert on American political history, constitutionalism, religious liberty, civil rights, government reform, and civic renewal. He runs the Heritage Foundation's B. Kenneth Simons Center for American Studies.
He's also currently a visiting assistant professor of government at Claremont McKenna College. He's the author of A Sacred Union of Citizens, George Washington's Farewell Address, and The American Character. Dr. Spalding, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's great to speak with you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm glad to have you here. I was interested to note in this week's or this month's, I think it's American History Magazine. It's one of the history magazines I subscribe to. The cover story about George Washington freeing his slaves. Did you see that? Do you know what I'm talking about?
No, I didn't see the particular article.
It's fascinating. And one of the points that they made was that in his will, in freeing his slaves, he was not able to free all of the slaves that were on his property because he couldn't afford it.
Oh, he couldn't afford it, plus he didn't own them all. Most of them
that was the
Martha
point.
Washington.
He would have had to buy them back from well, not just her, but all the relatives.
Right.
He was only able to free 150 of them that he himself owned. So many people attack the founders as men of wealth and privilege who were defending wealth and privilege. And this guy didn't have enough money to buy back the slaves that were working on his own plantation. I just find that fascinating. You wrote a book about George Washington's farewell address. Is that your take on, and, you know, George Washington? The European wealth in the 1770s, whatever wealth was happening in America, with the possible exception of the Johnson estate up on the Mohawk River, on the Mohawk Valley and on the Hudson River, where they had this huge castle and kind of robber barons of the 1700s, but they fled to Canada after the Revolution. Outside of them, I mean, we just didn't have it here. I mean, we didn't have the riches in the United States.
Well, or just even more broadly, the notion that our founders were motivated by narrow economic interests, for one thing, it's demeaning, but it just misses the larger picture. I mean, this is a vestige of kind of a liberal and almost a pseudo-Marxist interpretation that sees everything through the eyes of economics.
And well, I hear
the real story,
too.
Accomplished is so much more interesting than that.
Yeah, and Forrest MacDonald wrote a great book called We the People, just specifically refuting the Beard Hypothesis.
Precisely, right. Which is still a great book,
Beard's book?
Forrest MacDonald's
book. Forrest MacDonald's. Yeah, it absolutely is. Anyhow, I wanted to get into this, your take on conservatives versus neoconservatives. I think this is really interesting. And just the whole conservative line. What are the roots of American conservatism? And do they actually complement American democracy or not? I mean, don't you think in many ways that what we're seeing played out right now on the right, mm-hmm. between the conservatives and the neocons is, well, actually, let's step back even from that. Broadly between the right and the left, we're seeing played out the debates between Hamilton and the Jeffersonians back in the 1770s and more the 1780s. Where Hamilton was basically asserting that there should be a ruling elite, that the Senate should not be directly elected, that perhaps the president should serve for life, that we have to be careful about too much democracy. And the Jeffersonians were saying, no, kick the doors open. You know, let's go back to Athens, where it took 6,000 citizens to form a quorum and you could have a debate.
I'll agree with you in a certain way, but in another way, I really want to kind of challenge that thesis, because I would argue that what we're seeing in America today between the left and the right is radically different views of what America means according to its own tradition. And on that
score, I would
score,
agree with you so far.
Despite the vast differences between Hamilton and Jefferson, they are immensely close when you put it in today's context. The left, I would argue, has, largely because of the Progressive Era and the 20th century, completely jettisoned any tradition, Jeffersonian or Hamiltonian, such that what you're seeing today within conservatism are really more closely to the squabbles, I would say, of the American founding. But the point is that the modern left, because of its radical relativism and deconstruction and historicism, has completely given up on that argument and left it behind. And I don't think it in any way represents Jeffersonian.
Yeah, I mean, these are broad generalities, and I, you know, in response to such a generality, I can only say I strongly disagree. I mean, you say that the differences between Hamilton and Jefferson weren't all that great, but Hamilton saw an industrialized nation of cities, and Jefferson saw an agricultural nation of farms.
Well, I agree
and
with that.
Those two different visions ultimately led to the Civil War. That was not a small difference.
Their differences of policy matters pale in comparison to the difference today, vast ideological differences between the principal positions of the two leading interpretations, liberalism, conservatism. I don't deny
you think, you're seriously saying that you think that the difference between the Senate being elected by professional politicians in the states, which was Hamilton's position, and the Senate being elected by we the people, which was Jefferson's position, is not as is a greater or less, I mean, than today, than the debate between Democrats and Republicans?
I'm saying that modern liberalism generally is represented by the Democratic Party. Through the progressive movement, denied any philosophical grounds upon which Jefferson and Hamilton agreed. And that rejection, I think, is vastly more significant than the differences, albeit them very, very important, between Hamilton and Jefferson in the 18th century.
Yeah. Well, let's go to today. Let's get to today, to the modern conservative movement. Russell Kirk, in 1953, as I recall, wrote, and I'm drawing a blank on the title, The Mind of a Conservative, wasn't it?
The
Conservative Mind.
Right.
In which he, in my opinion, and you know, basically reinvented Thomas Hobbes and Edmund Burke, largely Burke, and made them more American. And he said there's these six canons of conservatism, and that... You know, that then, you know, William F. Buckley took that and ran with it and started the National Review, and Barry Goldwater took that and ran with it in 64. And the six canons of American conservatism, I mean, these are the founding notions. Let's just go through these.
Sure.
His first one was a divine intent rules society. I mean, isn't this an updated version of the divine right of kings and other conservative arguments that rights come from God?
I don't know if I would say divine right of king. What it is a recognition that there's a transcendent order, which is to say there's some sort of order outside of mere human existence that can't
sort of like Plato's
merely be ignored.
Shadows in the cave.
Well, whether it comes from religion, revelation, or it comes from a philosophical tradition, is in many ways of not as important as the fact that it is there and we can't set it aside.
Okay, but the conservatives know what it is and the liberals don't.
The conservatives recognize that it exists. Liberalism has decided it doesn't exist and should not be considered.
On what basis do you suggest that liberals don't believe that there are... See, what I see here is the fundamental difference is that liberals are... Conservatives, for example, let's take social issues for a moment. Conservatives would say, you know, personal morality is really important. Who you sleep with, who you're having sex with, what kind of sex it is, what drugs you're taking in the privacy of your own home. We're going to get really upset about these things, whether or not you're religious... Liberals, on the other hand, and they would look to, for example, the Ten Commandments in the Bible. Liberals, on the other hand, would look to, for example, Matthew 25 in the Bible and would say, we're equally upset about morality, but we think that the moral imperative is not individual personal conduct, but social and societal conduct. That is to say, are there hungry among us? Are there naked and homeless among us? Are there people in prison inappropriately? These are not... standards that are without principle.
Well, I agree with what you just your analysis. I mean, that's kind of social gospel thinking.
So then, how can you say that liberals don't see an underlying principle? I'm just suggesting that the liberals don't say that the underlying principle is a quote divine intent.
What I'm suggesting is that liberalism, by its own authors and writing, especially in the early 20th century, argued that. That principles are not transcendent in the sense that they are either moral or of political standing we have to respect.
Who said that?
To be determined by historical circumstances.
Who said that?
I agree with you. I don't see that as being a principle. I'm not saying they're unprincipled are lacking any rational argument.
But, you know, I mean, I've studied both, and I don't know of any liberal thinkers who have said such things. Stick on the line. We're talking now with Dr. Matthew Spaulding, director of the Kenneth Simon Center for American Studies at the Heritage Foundation. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program brought to you today by Small Dog Electronics and the Organic Wine Company. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Madden here to tell you about over $125 in mail-in rebate savings at the Ace One-Day Sale. Get great gifts from Black & Decker like a cordless screwdriver, 60-piece screwdriver bit set, or 17-piece drill bit set. Each one is free after $9.99 mail-in rebate. With great deals like these, you're sure to find everything you need at the Ace One-Day Sale this Friday, November 28th, at your neighborhood Ace, the helpful place. Quantities may be limited and are available at participating Ace stores. Rebates void in Connecticut.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Shopify.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
If you've got a clogged up nose, Simply Stuffy. If you've got a snuffly nose, Simply Stuffy. If the rest of you feels fine, but your nose is out of line, give your schnozzle what it needs, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy, from the makers of Children's Tylenol. It has only the medicine your child needs to make a stuffy nose simply disappear.
If you want to smell a rose, get the stuff out of your nose. If you're sick of feeling snotty, Simply Stuffy.
Simply Stuffy. Use as directed.
Did you pick up your phone book the other day and almost get a hernia because of all the lawyer ads? Do you panic when you turn on the television and there is another lawyer encouraging you to call him 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to find out who you can sue and what your rights are? Well, you don't need that anymore. But you know, you don't get your surgeon out of the yellow pages, and you don't need a retainer fee to listen to me. The Legal Huddle is your one-stop radio shop for everything you would ever want to know about the American legal system. I'm Ed Zelenak. I've been a prosecutor, bandleader, foreign diplomat, and advisor to presidential candidates. And as your host of the Legal Huddle, I'm uniquely qualified to answer everything you ever wanted to know about the law but were afraid to ask. And you know, if I don't know the answer, I'll make one up. You can call me with your questions, your comments, your opinions, and your feelings about our judiciary. And you know something? I will never hold you in contempt of court in the Legal Huddle. So join me and a cast of thousands here in the Legal Huddle Sunday mornings, 9 until 11, on the IE America Radio Network.
Not your father's radio program, take 47.
Tune in to Animal Talk this Sunday.
Yeah!
Animal Celebrity Boxing.
We're gonna kick some butt!
Lightweight bout featuring fearless Felix the Cat.
What a cat!
And that dog on ice, Tonya Harding.
Tonya Harding, she'll fight anyone for a buck.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Boy, come on!
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Welcome back to the nation's largest nationally syndicated daytime progressive talk show. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. You're in the democracy zone. Civilization. We're speaking with Dr. Matthew Spaulding of the Heritage Foundation, an expert on American political history, constitutionalism, religious liberty, civil rights, government reform, and civil renewal. And Dr. Spaulding, we were talking about the foundations of conservatism. Another one is, as defined by Kirk, is civilized society requires orders and classes. Edmund Burke wrote about this. He said, and I quote, "The occupation of a hairdresser or of a working tallow chandler, a candlemaker, cannot be a matter of honor to any person, to say nothing of a number of other more servile employments. Such description of men ought not to suffer oppression from the state, but the state suffers oppression if such as they, either individually or collectively, are permitted to rule." And when Kirk says, and I quote, "civilized society requires orders and classes," end quote, this is the heart of conservative thought in all history, isn't it? It's about the concentration of power in a privileged class held together by a caste system. Haven't we grown more civilized as a society, and shouldn't we be trying to do away with rigid caste systems?
I will confuse you here. I agree. And Kirk's argument there does not represent the heart of conservatism. And here's where I think Kirk played a very important historical role, and there are certain things which are absolutely key. There are certain things in which he got it wrong, and that's one of the main ones. Kirk ultimately looked to Burke too much and not to American thinking enough. And he overestimated the European influence on American thought, rather than focusing on American thought as it emanates from things like the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. He got some of these things wrong, and that's one of them.
Don't you think, though, that for example, we just saw this HMO or this drug coverage for Medicare bill pass, and even the conservatives are pretty open in saying basically the drug companies wrote this bill. You know, they're going to be the big winners on this thing, and you know they're saying and it'll be good for people. You know, but it's going to be great for the drug companies. It's going to be great for Bill Frist's family corporation, his hospital corporation. It's going to be great for the health insurance companies.
It was full of pork all over the place, and that's why we opposed it.
I agree. And isn't the open embrace in the larger conservative movement in America, not in the idealistic conservative movement that I think you and some at the Heritage Foundation represent, but the political conservative, those people who call themselves conservatives, who now are camped out in the White House, the Senate, and the House of Representatives, and the Supreme Court, and who embrace corporations as equals to people legally, you know, with the Boston versus Bellotti decision, with the 1886 Santa Clara decision, things like this. Aren't they defining a new caste system with corporations and corporate CEOs at the top of the caste?
I don't know if I'd go that far, although one thing I would grant is that I think conservatives, that is, the political conservatives who claim the mantle of conservatism, as with a lot of liberals who claim the mantle of liberals, I think what we're seeing in America today is a new kind of narrow unprincipled politics, and we see it come out in things like this health care reform, which is driven less by principle, left or right, and driven more by narrow self-interests, and that does not portend well, I think, either for liberalism or conservatism.
Hello?
I'm here.
Oh, I'm sorry. My computer here just croaked for a minute. I heard you get as far as narrow, and then you vanished. So I'm assuming that you made a point there, but I'm sorry I didn't.
We're seeing more narrow politics than broad principled politics on the left or the right.
Yeah. Okay. And I know that you can't stay with us beyond the half hour break here, Dr. Spaulding. So I'm going to have to thank you for being on the program at this point, and hopefully we can continue this conversation in the future.
Great.
Great. Thank you for being on today. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Ocean water is likely to become more acidic if we keep up our heavy use of fossil fuels. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Ocean water absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and some people hope it will absorb some of the CO2 we generate by burning fossil fuels. But new research suggests too much carbon dioxide could make ocean water more acidic, and the effects on marine life are uncertain. Ken Caldera is a chemical oceanographer for the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. He says the process of CO2 dissolving into the water is completely natural, and the gas and water combine to form carbonic acid. Caldera says when we add more CO2 to the atmosphere, that leads to more carbonic acid in the oceans.
And so large amounts of CO2 are accumulating in the ocean, and it will take many thousands of years for that to be buffered.
Fossil fuels have been the backbone of industrialized society for two centuries. Caldera says if their heavy use continues for centuries into the future, the impacts could be dramatic. He says the oceans will become more acidic than they've been for millions of years. He says the biological impacts of that acidity need more research. For example, it might make it hard for clams and corals to get minerals they need to build their shells.
It's been generally viewed that the uptake of carbon dioxide by the ocean was a good thing, because it took CO2 out of the atmosphere and thereby reduced or slowed the rate of climate change. But if the uptake of CO2 itself has adverse chemical effects on marine biota, then it's at best a mixed blessing.
Caldera's research was published in a recent issue of the journal Nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You know, Jamie, if people don't listen to animal talk, things with their animals won't go well.
Oh, they won't.
No, absolutely not. You see, because a dog will poop in the corner, and then a cat will end up peeing on a pillow. Then you'll have somebody who has an iguana that turns a little red. We don't want red iguanas. We don't want poopy in the corner. We don't want cat pee. If you don't listen to animal talk, you'll have crap everywhere.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
Andy Dave Rush here, inviting you to listen to Home Improvement USA. Ken Walchek from Chicago's number one hardware store, Clark Devon Hardware, John Seip from United Marketing Force, Jay Brentlinger from Orban, and, of course, Danny Lipford from today's Homeowner Television Show, take your home improvement questions. Our guests include industry experts from across the country. We've been America's most useful talk show for 10 years, so join us for Home Improvement USA every Saturday, 2 to 4 Eastern, and rebroadcast 8 to 10 Eastern right here on IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
While we're young, I remember thinking like that.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman at the IE America Radio Network. I remember a time when I really and truly believed I would not live past 30. And I just thought that, you know, the world was just going down the tubes. And you know, it's funny. Those of us who grew up with duck and cover
You know, sitting in 6, 7, 8 years old, sitting in a classroom, and the bell goes off, and then the siren goes off, and you got to dive under your desk and put your hands in such a way that they cover both your ears with your thumbs and your eyes with your fingers, so that when the nuclear blast goes off, it won't burst your eardrums and blind you. It certainly changes the way you view the world, at least through your teenage years. So anyway, we were speaking with Matthew Spaulding. I had thought he could be on for the hour. He let us know that during the first break there that he would have to leave at the half hour, unfortunately, because I wanted to go through the five principal points of conservatism, and I think we still should, because many of you are in positions to speak with people who call themselves conservatives, and you may find useful to know what it really means. It doesn't, most people are like, conservative, it means you're in favor of the flag and you're a Christian or something like that, you know. Nothing to do with that. There is a set of principles associated with conservatism. And there are people, you know, presumably like Dr. Spaulding and others who adhere to them, who believe in them, who think that they're very, you know, they're noble principles. And it's not like good people, bad people. Conservatives, liberals, in my opinion. It's different worldviews, and I'd like to go through the rest of that conservative worldview with you. In the meantime, though, if you have thoughts or questions or comments you want to drop in with, feel free to give us a call. 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937 is our telephone number here on the Tom Hartman radio program, listened to across the planet. We're streaming live on IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, and RadioPower.org, where we've confirmed 91 nations listening to this program. And of course, broadcasting live coast-to-coast on the IE America Radio Network and streaming down for all of North America, you know, from Alaska to to Central America. From the Sirius Satellite Radio System, Stream 145. So thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening. 1-800-TALK-YES. And Armand in Florida is on the line. Hey, Armand, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. What's on your mind?
Thank you very much. Happy Thanksgiving to you and everybody in the network and everybody.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I wanted to let you know, by the way, I will be here live and on the air tomorrow from noon to 3 Eastern time. So,
okay. I've got something I'd quickly like to read, if I can. It's 6 points, and it's a Thanksgiving thank you.
No, Armand, I'm sorry, I'm not going to let you read something. You want to say something, that's great, but people reading things on the air is death. Why don't you just tell us about what you wanted to tell us about?
Well, this is from the devil to W.
Yeah, that's okay. This isn't a BBS. It's not, you know, let's forward an email to somebody and you know, here's somebody else's thing. No, it's not. Armand, thanks for calling, but, you know, I'm sorry, we're not going to do it. I appreciate your calls, but no. The King's Kirk's Six Canons of Conservatism. Let's just go back and go through these. I want to just go through them so that you know what they are. The Six Canons of Conservatism. Number one, a divine intent rules society. In other words, God made the rules. Number two, traditional life is filled with variety and mystery, while most radical systems are characterized by a narrowing uniformity. Now, what the heck does that mean? Actually, what that means, in my opinion, is that the folks who are calling themselves conservatives in the White House are not really conservatives. That's why so many of them call themselves neocons, the new conservatives, because they're characterizing themselves as the opposite of conservatives. What they say is that, you know, again, Kirk says traditional life is filled with variety and mystery, while most radical systems are characterized by a narrowing uniformity. And I would say that this is that narrowing uniformity that we're seeing. It's this absolute focus on you know, the preemption of America, the you know, getting things down to talking points, dominate the world, that's it. It's our way or the highway. You're with us or against us. You're good or you're evil. That is not classic conservative. That's bizarre, actually. It doesn't have a political label beyond that. Or you actually, I think that's probably closer to what Mussolini invented when he called it fascism.
1-800-TALK, yes, our number. Angie in Portland's on the line. Hey, Angie, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, how you guys doing today? Listen,
we're great.
Yeah, you know, I'm just really depressed about things because of the fact that as a Christian that is a Democrat, it's becoming more and more that I have to defend my Christianity against all the, in my opinion, these people that are calling themselves Christians that are totally not doing anything that is remotely relate to Christianity as far as, you know, helping the poor, helping the widows, helping the orphans, you know, things that Jesus preached for, talked for, all of that, in my opinion, they have thrown out the window, and it's like upside down and it's backwards.
Yeah, I agree. And the thing that I say to these so-called Christians who, and particularly, I mean, you know, you can say this is true in any religion. I mean, every religion is founded on the same principles, not just of the thou shalt nots, but also of the thou shalts.
You know,
in Judaism, it's tikkun, the idea of healing the world, tikkun la'olam.
Right.
And the whole concept of hospitality that's so just, you know, rich in the Muslim world. But right. I just throw Matthew 25 back at them. I mean, you say, you know, how can you read Matthew 25, the words of Jesus, where he said, you know, only those people, the only people who are going to get into heaven, it has nothing to do with anything else. The only people who are going to get into heaven are those people who fed the least among us.
Exactly.
Who clothed the least among us, who gave them housing, who visited them when they were in prison unfairly, and who advocated for them.
That's right. And I know you're not trying to make it a religious program, but it really makes me angry that It's like people, I don't know what is going on with people that are supposed to be, I can't even really say Christian no more because they're not Christ-like. They want to say that they're so holy and act this way, and they hate the homosexuals. And I said to myself, what are you talking? You're supposed to love everyone. And even the Bible says this one scripture, and I'm not going to quote scriptures, but this one scripture that says, how can you say you love me meaning God, and hate your brother who you see every day, and love me who you've never seen. And the Bible says you are a liar and the truth is not in you. So when these people come on and they hate, they hate the blacks. And see, I'm a black American, and I think that's one thing that really makes me angry, because if it wasn't for my faith in God, believing that there's going to be a better place in this crazy world, I don't even know what hope I would have.
Yeah, but Angie, let me say, you know, we can also make this a better world, and that is one of the foundational principles of liberalism. Conservatism, and thank you for the call, Angie. I appreciate your comments, and you very well said. And conservatism is really grounded in an irrational concept that there is some defining principle out there that is divine principle that we, and liberalism is grounded in practical reality. What makes society better? What makes the quality of life better? Not just for George Bush and his family, but for all of us. What creates the kind of world in which we want to live? And if you want to call that moral relativism, fine, I don't care. But the bottom line is that it has to do with practicality. What's going to work? 1-800-TALK, yes, our number. JR in Victorville, California is on the line. Hey, JR, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, tis I, JR.
tis I, okay, well said.
This discussion about the difference between the left and the right has interested me over the years. But one thing I wanted to just precede quickly with a follow-up. Yesterday you told me that Bradwell versus the state of Illinois prevented Myra Bradwell from voting, and it didn't prevent her from voting, it just prevented her from being a lawyer.
Right, and that's what I said. I didn't say it prevented her from voting. I said it prevented her from practicing law, but that was the first time.
You cited her as a case of some where the 14th Amendment was used to prevent someone from voting. And
I did
some research on it, and that the 14th Amendment didn't stop women from voting. The state's rules stopped women from voting because the discussion. I did some research on this, and I read a lot of stuff about it. But all I could ever find.
I agree with you. You're right, JR.
Okay.
No.
You know, if you thought yesterday that I was saying that the Bradwell versus State case was about women voting, then I apologize because I didn't mean to communicate that to you, if that's what you thought I said. I certainly would not say that because I've read the case.
Right. I thought you read the case, but remember our discussion was, I said, where does the Constitution say women can't vote? And you went to the,
and I said,
to
nowhere.
The 14th, but you went to the 14th Amendment and cited that the business about the number of male citizens in the state, that was just about apportionment, not about
that's
who
right.
could or could not vote.
But so it was the 14th Amendment. The point that I was making was that it was when the reason why Elizabeth Cady Stanton and Susan B. Anthony so opposed the 14th Amendment, Susan B. Anthony said, if the word male gets put into the Constitution with this amendment, it'll take a century to get it out, and she was 3 years off.
Mm-hmm. Well, that may or may not be true, but the thing I'm getting at is that there was no federal restriction that I could ever find, and so that part is that I still stand on.
I agree with you.
But on the left and the right, if you have a moment.
Sure.
When I was becoming politically aware, I was trying to put myself on that bipolar continuum of was I a lefty or was I a righty? And I immediately eliminated communism because I thought it was a bad system, and communism and socialism are twin brothers, really. I know people still try to debate about the difference between those. So I figured, okay, I'm not there. And then if I saw everybody always put on this line that fascism was the far right, and I figured, well, of course I'm not there because the beliefs I have could never lead me to fascism, just like they could never lead me to socialism or communism. And
what's your point, J.R.?
The point is that that I am a man of the right. That's why that's why my nom de guerre is J.R. I'm Jim from the right. That's
okay.
The thing is, the confusion is that the fascism needs to be put on the left side of the scale because fascism and socialism and communism share too many things. They're not very different from each other. And so that way, once you can understand the logic of the difference between what opposites mean, then you can't put fascism on the far right. Fascism belongs closer over to socialism. And that is why, because look, they're both centralized governments.
J.R., it's a straw man argument, J.R.,
Well, let me ask do you believe that fascism and socialism are opposite?
I think that the fascism and communism, as it plays out at the state level, and I'm assuming that you're sufficiently familiar with communism to know the difference between how it plays out on a kibbutz in Israel and how it played out in the USSR.
Yeah, there is a difference in the kibbutz, right? But
is pure communism, and it works.
The communal sharing of the kibbutzes, you think they work, that they're successful, and that they're a model that other populations could imitate?
Oh, sure, because they're based on a tribal model. You find the same model among indigenous people who have been living that way for 60,000 years.
Yeah, but if you think
about it. But the problem is it breaks down when you get more than 150 people. And this goes back to, I forget the guy's name, there's a British psychologist who did this fascinating study about brain size of animals and social communities. And he found that there was a direct relationship, a linear relationship, you could chart this thing on an XY-axis, of the number of cc's of brain mass that an animal has and the maximum number of people within its community, within its social circle. You know, a prairie dog might have like 12. A chimpanzee might have maybe 20, an orangutan might have 30, or what, you know, and they get to humans, and it was 150. And so then he started looking for communities, and what he found was that among tribal people, in almost every single case, when you hit 150, tribes start to split. They split into other groups. Even the Mormons, I mean, when Joseph Smith started charging across or Brigham Young started going across the West, whenever a Mormon community reached 150, they would split into another community. And the reason why is because communism works in communities of 150 where everybody knows everybody. But when you get beyond a community of 150, it's impossible to make it work. And so what happens is that the communism, as it was played out by the USSR, was not really communism. And I'm not standing here as an advocate for communism, by the way. It was a dictatorship. It was just a plain old fascistic style. And you could even say it was a form of fascism in that Mussolini, who invented the word fascism, used the bundle of fasce, the sticks with an axe in it that was the symbol of the Roman Empire.
It was wrapped together with a cord so that the one stick could be broken, but the whole thing would still be
right. And Mussolini said that bundle, in order for it to to be strong should be both the state and corporations.
Right. So you agree, that if a person was trying to put themselves on a political line, that if they looked at fascism and communism as practiced, that they would be too similar. They wouldn't be opposite of each other. They would be pretty much the same.
And well, there's some areas, JR, where they're opposite. There's some areas where they're similar, and that's why I'm saying to call either one left or right is just too thin. It's, you know, it breaks down. It's too much. JR, thanks for the call. I appreciate your comments. I'm sure we'll continue this conversation. What are the roots of American conservatism, and do they complement American democracy? We'll be back with this in just a moment. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation, but how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America, Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. But don't take my word for it. Call us to get a free sampler. Yes, you heard me right, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
Hey folks, John Madden here to let you in on one of the biggest sale events of the season. The Ace One Day Sale this Friday, November 28th. You'll find great gifts like a Windmere Mini Food Chopper or 12-cup coffee maker. They're only $4.99 each after a $5 mail-in rebate. And with great deals on power tools, holiday decorations, and more, this is one sale you don't want to miss. So drop by your neighborhood Ace this Friday, November 28th. Ace, the helpful place. Quantities may be limited and are available at participating Ace stores. Rebates void in Connecticut.
Women over 50 and men over 40 are waking up to a surprising fact. They're already at risk of a heart attack. Because of age and other risk factors, doctors often recommend Bayer low-dose aspirin as part of a routine to help prevent a heart attack. Bayer is the leading aspirin brand, and taking Bayer for your heart is easy. Aspirin is not appropriate for everyone, so be sure to talk to your doctor before you begin an aspirin regimen and ask about adding Bayer to your routine for many more great days ahead. Trust your heart to Bayer.
This season, don't just give a gift, give the good life at the Thanksgiving weekend sale at Sears. All weekend, save big throughout the store. Plus, this Friday, come into Sears from 6 to 11 a.m. and save 50% off hundreds of items, from electronics to fine jewelry, including our lowest price ever on a Sylvania combination TV-DVD player, just $129.99. Can't wait for the holidays? Then hurry into Sears and save big. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. This holiday, give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 11/28/03.
Greetings, everybody. This is Ramsey Pollard, Jr., the host of IE America's Sunday afternoon travel show, Ramblin' with Ramsey, on air 5 to 7 p.m. Eastern Time. Almost every Sunday, I travel to some location to offer you the opportunity of not only receiving wonderful printed material about the location, but to win a prize, maybe a couple of nights in a hotel or a resort or T-shirts or fudge. Oh, yes, there's always a lot of fudge. Come on, tune us in on your radio or go to IEAmericaRadio.com. I'll be there.
Do you dig your dog, but your dog digs your rose bushes?
Does Hole in the Head have your Oscar?
Is your cat doing a Tarzan swing from your drapes?
Is your python pooped?
Do you hate your folks because they spent your college tuition on a European vacation?
Jamie, what does that have to do with animals?
I don't know. I kind of ran out of stuff.
Now, come on, this is a commercial for a major radio network. We should do better.
Animal Talk, Sunday night on the IE America Radio Network.
Tom Hartman Show.
Bill in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, posting on our message board. The doorbell rang, and I answered the door. Just as I finished posting how fed up I am with Bush, what a surprise. The guy standing in front of my door was very Republican look about him. His first words to me were, "Hi, I am your Republican precinct captain." Boy, has this guy got the wrong address, I said to myself. But not before I made it known to him that I consider Bush a menace to America. He started squirming and glancing around the front of my house. Our junkie responds. He says, "I remember when the only people we had to worry about meeting on our doorsteps were Jehovah's Witness crusaders. Now we have right-wingers. That's really scary." How to scare off door-to-door Republican visitors. And Klaus adds, "Well, answering the door naked can have the desired effect."
For Christ's sake, will you cover yourself?
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, me friend, them set me free again. Yes, me friend, me dead on the streets again.
Helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Today, day 798 in the search for Osama. We need to be searching for the causes of 9/11, too. I'm going to get into that. Actually, it'll be in the hour after this. But 512 fatalities, military fatalities so far among U.S. and U.K. soldiers so far in this effort. 512, and the total number of injuries, of wounded, 2,437. And that doesn't include the Iraqi human beings that are not being counted by our Pentagon. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, and Jeff in Denver's on the line. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. Just a quick comment dealing with the JR's thing of trying to box the world up into a linear scale. I think that's one of our basic problems. I mean, I just cringe every time I hear people talk about both sides of an argument. There's so many sides. It's so multidimensional. And so many people have such a need to quantify. And I do it myself to a certain extent. But we've got to be careful of that.
You know, like, you know who was really incredible at that was James Madison. He would go read the Federalist Papers, you know, the ones that he wrote, and he would always take a thing and he would say, "And this means there are two points to this." And then he'd take one of those two points and he'd say, "And if you look at that, there are two points to that." And by the time he's gotten like 5 points down, he's got, you know, he's spread each one into 2 points, and now he's got like 30 points spread all over the table, you know, but he's always puts them in these polarities, and it's just wow. Anyway,
yeah,
pardon the interruption.
We don't live in such a polar world. There are so many subtle nuances, but we tend to have a hard time if we can't box something up.
Yeah, I think this might have something to do also with this whole notion of judges and perceivers. I find that written so large. There was a study the other day that was reported on CNN a couple days ago where they found that Republicans tended to be, well,
I understand.
We'll get into that after later on. The music means we're at the end of the show. Anyhow, Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate your calling. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, where our talking points come from Jefferson and Madison, not the Republican National Committee and right-wing think tanks. Stay tuned. We'll be back after the news.
Been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
following program is recommended for mature individuals and may contain material unsuitable for morons, cretins, and dishwipes.
Hey, I wanted to say dick dick.
Okay, give me your anaconda. I'll give you my dick dick.
Deal!
Anaconda! Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network. All right, boys, come on.
Mike Malloy is rational and, you know, I mean, whatever.
You want me fired, too?
I mean, I hate the guy. And
you hate me?
True.
You hate me?
Why not put something on that says he's a great goof liberal?
Goof?
Yeah, I just can't believe it.
The Mike Malloy Show, weekdays from 9 p.m. till midnight, Eastern Time on IE America Radio Network.
IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Guerrillas fired rockets at the headquarters of the U.S.-led administration in central Baghdad on Tuesday, and loudspeakers ordered personnel in the compound to take cover as explosions echoed across the Iraqi capital. Sirens wailed, flares lit up the night sky, and U.S. helicopters clattered overhead. A spokesman for the 1st Armored Division, which patrols Baghdad, said at least two rockets had been fired. One crashed through the roof of an empty apartment building near the coalition compound, and another landed near a bus station. There were no reports of U.S. soldiers being injured or of civilian casualties. A major pipeline linking oil fields in northern Iraq to the country's biggest oil refinery was ablaze Wednesday, according to witnesses. Sheets of flame and thick black smoke were shooting from the damaged line near the village of Sharkat, about 30 miles north of Iraq's largest oil refinery. There was no immediate explanation about what had caused the fire. Its location was about 135 miles north of the Iraqi capital, in the so-called Sunni Triangle, where guerrillas have repeatedly attacked pipelines linking Iraq's oil fields with Turkey. Civil rights groups complained Tuesday that police at last week's trade talks in Miami abused protesters, some senior citizens, by arresting them without cause and denying them restrooms, water, and phones. Meanwhile, the National Steelworkers Union called for a congressional investigation and the removal of Miami Police Chief John Timoney over the treatment of its members during the protest, and several groups said they will sue the city. The union sent a letter to congressional leaders late Monday criticizing police. The letter also criticized the use of federal money, $8.5 million was allocated, for Miami's security cost, calling it money for homeland repression. More IE American Network news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal, some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A state law mandating that people take a bath once a year is just one of the many unusual statutes that are or have been on the books in Kentucky. Other unusual laws from across the state include a year in prison for throwing eggs at a public speaker and a law against coloring baby chicks, ducklings, or rabbits. Then there's the dog tax. The statute required a small amount for each dog to be collected. The sheriff is to collect the tax or shoot the dog, according to the minutes. For IE America Radio, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil cold and sinus.
Quick, over to the highway.
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil cold and sinus. Use as directed.
If insanity could be packaged, Monsanto would surely own the patent. This biotech giant is insanely manipulating the genetics of our world's food supply without long-term testing of how these frankenfoods will affect human health or our environment. Monsanto maniacally pushes these products without even informing consumers that the very DNA of the foodstuffs they're eating has been artificially altered in its corporate laboratories, literally using us as its guinea pigs. And, like a foam-at-the-mouth mad dog, Monsanto attacks anyone who dares get in the way of its genetic profiteering. Oakhurst Dairy in Portland, Maine has seen Monsanto's madness in action. It's a small milk processor that tries to do business the old-fashioned way, giving consumers what they want. Or, in this case, not giving consumers what they don't want, which is milk laced with Monsanto's artificial growth hormone, which has been linked to causing everything from premature puberty in children to health problems in cows injected with it. Overwhelmingly, consumers say they don't want this stuff in their milk, so Oakhurst Dairy started paying dairy farmers a premium for milk that's certified to be free of it. Oakhurst proudly labels its jugs with this promise: no artificial growth hormones. Enter the raw nuttiness of Monsanto, which has now sued Oakhurst, claiming that its label deceives consumers by making them think that the pure milk is healthier than milk with Monsanto's hormones. In fact, all Oakhurst is doing is letting customers know what's not in their product, so customers can make up their own minds which milk to buy. As Oakhurst's president puts it, we're in the business of marketing milk, not Monsanto's drugs. Besides, he says, the world seems a little bit discombobulated when someone attempts to prohibit you from doing the right thing. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop Monsanto, call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
Tia Carrera is on the front in Playboy. I think what you have done is give a little more license to people who have a few more years on them.
Probably. A few more years
I'm talking about the tread on a tire. Yeah, never mind. I can't make it better.
Just when I think you couldn't possibly be any dumber, you go and do something like this.
On the IE America Radio Network. Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. We're broadcasting live coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations via the IE America Radio Network, bouncing off the ABC Starguide 3 satellite, also distributing the program on stream 145 from a Sirius satellite radio system. And you can find us also on the Internet. Go to TomHartman.com. You can find links to all of this. The Internet stations carry the program are RadioPower.org, IEAmericaRadio.com, Live365.com, and archives at WhiteRoseSociety.org. And you can find all of that at TomHartman.com, as well as a link to our chat room where it's full of folks, and they're having a conversation here about the things that we've been talking. It's fascinating, real-time, real interactive. It's like the new medium. It's quite remarkable. We've been talking about the pillars of American conservatism and liberalism this last hour, and it's an interesting segue into this hour and this guest. And I'm really looking forward to this conversation. Ambassador Mark Palmer, who was our former ambassador to Hungary. Served 4 years as our ambassador to Hungary. He's also been the deputy assistant secretary of state for Soviet relations, speechwriter for three presidents, six secretaries of state, including Henry Kissinger. I'm not sure, Ambassador Palmer, that I would have said that. But welcome to the program.
Thank you.
His new book is called Breaking the Real Axis of Evil. How to Oust the World's Last Dictators by 2025. And there's some, you know, the broad premise of the book is the idea that democracies don't go to war with each other, that nonviolence ultimately triumphs over violence, that violence, and correct me if I'm wrong, probably I should let you summarize the book better than me. In fact, why don't I just do that? Give us a snapshot of it.
Well, the thesis of the book is indeed that democracies don't fight with one another, and that if you could foresee a world or visualize a world that was 100% democratic, that there would be no war. There might be competition, but no war, and that people would live much better in terms of their standard of living, and many other things would be remarkably better than they are today. And the book argues that that's not fantasy, that we've seen huge progress in the last 30 years in getting rid of dictators. And so the purpose of the book is to try to think through with others and to begin a national debate on how best to do that. And, of course, I have my thoughts about how best to oust the remaining dictators.
Yeah, you've identified the 45 least wanted, the dictators left on the planet. Your idea of embassies as freedom houses and ambassadors as freedom fighters, I think, is noble. The charge for your argument is that no two democracies have ever gone to war, so to get rid of the dictators. But there are, you know, some rebuttals to that. There are folks who, for example, point to the War of 1812. And say the United States versus Great Britain, two democracies. I mean, some would say England really didn't become a democracy until the reform of 1832. Is that what you're suggesting? Or
yes, and I also would argue that the United States wasn't much of a democracy. More than half of our citizens didn't have the vote. Women, African Americans didn't really get the vote until the 60s of this century. So I think neither party in that war was really a full-scale democracy. We were on.
Yeah.
Both of us were underway, but not where we needed to get.
Yeah, I'll just, you know, to argue a small but and probably irrelevant point. In 1812, there actually were women and there were African Americans in the United States, and in fact, female African Americans who were voting. It wasn't the case in most states, but
right.
It wasn't until we got close to the Civil War.
Yeah.
That we became more universally unsuffraged, as it were. And that was one of the things that brought about Lincoln and the Republican Party's kind of backlash to that. One of the things that you suggest here in this book, let me just find this piece here. I propose that the major multinational corporations and their associations establish the Business Community for Democracy as a partner for the government's Community of Democracies and the NGO Forum on Democracy. This new institution, made up of the world's largest and most successful corporations, would agree that democracy, including the rule of law, is required for proper functioning and success of business. Aren't we seeing in the United States right now the actual usurpation of democratic processes by corporations? For example, what we just saw with this health care bill.
Well, that's, of course, not the subject of my book, but I think it's a legitimate and serious subject. The problem that I see with businesses, multinationals around the world, is that on the whole, they have tolerated dictatorships and cooperated with them. And so what I'm arguing is that they need to get their act together. They need to recognize what their real interests are as businessmen. I am myself a businessman. And their real interest is in the rule of law, is in property rights, respect of intellectual rights. And in dictatorships, you don't have that. Dictators, as we've seen repeatedly in history, are quite willing to just take property, to demand bribes from businessmen, and the environment for business in dictatorships is just not right. But individual companies have a hard time dealing with that, so I'm suggesting that they get together for the first time in history, pool some money and some talent, and actually work on introducing the rule of law, getting rid of corruption, and helping Democrats to get into power.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm also a businessman, and I think we both realize that the corporations can be run ethically, and particularly small and medium-sized businesses, as Teddy Roosevelt pointed out just about every other week of his political career, at least the later years of it. Small and medium businesses can be run in very moral fashion at the whim of their owners. But when a corporation reaches a certain size, it has to be driven. You know, the needle of the compass has to go in one particular direction, both by practical consideration and also now by law. We've had Supreme Court decisions that corporate directors are not fulfilling their fiduciary obligations if they fail to enhance shareholder value. So a corporation is not a democratic institution. And a corporation, if it can make more profit dealing with communist China dictators, or a totalitarian regime in Burma, it's required by law to do so.
Well, yes and no. I mean, certainly in the short term, that's absolutely right. A company in Saudi Arabia or Burma or China has to, in terms of its shareholders' interests, get along with whoever's there to deal with. But looking at the medium and longer term, it's not true. The shareholders' value will be substantially enhanced if the country changes and becomes a rule of law, free market economy with all of the restraints that, of course, any modern economy and any modern state should have. That is really much better for the shareholders' value.
Yeah, this is where I think we're just going to have to agree to disagree, because I just don't see corporations as being the ones that are going to lead the charge. In fact, you know, you look back at Benito Mussolini, who defined fascism as the merging of business and state interests.
But, of course, businesses suffered in Italy and in Germany and in Japan from fascism. Many businesses were taken over by the state. Many business leaders were executed.
But those businesses who merged with the state made out like bandits.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, several of them, like Bayer Corporation, is still a huge empire. You know, and their participation with Joseph Mengele and all that stuff. I mean, you know, it's.
But the genius of democracy, of course, is in part to control corporate greed. And when democracy fails to do that, of course, it's threatened and ultimately can be destroyed.
Bingo.
But when good radio shows like yours and newspapers and others expose the corruption of business, then it can be addressed and is being addressed here and in other countries. But in dictatorships, it just doesn't get addressed. You know,
yeah.
There is no free press.
Yeah, so the bottom line is there's more hope in a democracy for taking on challenging corporate power or any anti-democratic institutions than there are in totalitarian
regimes. I'm not arguing that business is the best lead actor in getting rid of dictators. I don't believe that to be the case. I think the best lead actors are the citizens of those countries, particularly younger people, students, intellectuals, workers. Historically, as we've just seen most recently in the country of Georgia, people power is what really is the lead edge of change. But other institutions, including democratic governments, can come in and support them, and that's what's been missing. There has been very little support for people power movements around the world, including very little corporate support, virtually no corporate support.
Although in the case of Georgia, not to split too fine a hair here, but don't you think Shevardnadze is facing a revolt of the elites rather than a revolt of the people?
No, I think this is a people's movement. I know Shevardnadze personally, and he certainly played a remarkable and positive role in the late 80s in changing communism in the Soviet Union and bringing independence for his country and many others. But since then, he really has been himself part of a corrupt elite. And I think that the new forces that have emerged there, although they're certainly elite in the sense that they're intellectuals, and some of them have been part of the Shevardnadze system, but they've broken with it. And I think there's a real opening now in Georgia, and it's very exciting to see how it was done, because it was done in the way that I argue strongly in my book can be done in Saudi Arabia, Burma, China, North Korea, and other places. It was a real peaceful, as they call it, a rose revolution.
Yeah, so far. We'll see how it plays out. That's great. I mean, you are the expert on this, and I appreciate your opinion. We're talking with Ambassador Mark Palmer, who has written a very thought-provoking, remarkable book, Breaking the Real Axis of Evil, How to Oust the World's Last Dictators by 2025. Ambassador Palmer, Stalin's totalitarian government may not have lasted as long as it did in World War II, or rather, if World War II hadn't really given him a cause to rally the country around. You make the point in your book that threatening your adversaries doesn't keep them quiet. In fact, sometimes it empowers them. Two quick questions about that, and then we just about have about a minute before we got to go to a break, but we can pick this up on the other side of the break. So if you hear the music start, then I'm going to have to wrap it up. But with the RNC, Republican National Committee, painting dissenters as unpatriotic traitors with these ads that the Bush administration is running in Iowa, aren't they following the same path as Stalin? And would you describe Bush's technique, his approach to the UN, as kind of Stalin-esque, and maybe that's why the UN hasn't fallen in line with him?
Well, in my book, I argue strongly for a different approach to Iraq, for example, than the Bush administration took. I think that we could have, if we'd been willing to take some more time, we could have helped Iraqis organize a people power movement there, too. And I actually started to do that. I was working with some exiles, Iraqi exiles, including some former generals, trying to help train them in nonviolent techniques and strategies. But the Bush administration felt that that wasn't going to work, and of course they went ahead with what they went ahead with.
Yeah, and they certainly did. We're talking with Mark Palmer, Ambassador Mark Palmer, former U.S. Ambassador to Hungary. Breaking the Real Axis of Evil is the book he's the author of. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. It's 20 minutes after the hour. We'll be back right after this break. Stay tuned.
This season, don't just give a gift, give the good life at the Thanksgiving weekend sale at Sears. All weekend, save big throughout the store. Plus, this Friday, come into Sears from 6 to 11 a.m. and save 50% off hundreds of items, from electronics to fine jewelry, including our lowest price ever on a Sylvania Combination TV-DVD player, just $129.99. Can't wait for the holidays? Then hurry into Sears and save big. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. This holiday, give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 11/28/03.
Oh, Randy, it was a mistake bringing you to the Texas Yodel Off.
Prilosec, Odol OTC.
Oh, boy. Well, at least we've helped lots of frequent heartburn sufferers with new Prilosec OTC, that one pill a day.
It little pill-io.
For 24 hours of zero heartburn.
One whole day.
Oh, it's possible with Prilosec OTC, and it starts working the very first day.
Hee-haw.
Now, if you could just stop that yodeling.
Prilosec, Odol OTC.
Use as directed for 14 days for frequent heartburn.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions, and we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you, people who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
Right now would be a good time to come to Napa Auto Parts, because we've got a huge selection of performance and style accessories for sport compact cars just in time for the holiday season. This is the good stuff. Upgrade your ride with Intimidator stainless steel mufflers, air intake kits, and head-turning Eurotech taillight assemblies. So make sure you pick up all the latest APC performance and style accessories at Napa.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
Show. According to Abbas,
Immediately after Bush promised to speak with Sharon about the siege on Arafat, Bush said, quote, God told me to strike at Al-Qaeda, and I struck them. And then God instructed me to strike at Saddam, which I did. When God specifically whispers in someone's ear, I want you to go kill those people, and they go ahead and kill somebody, what do we do with those folks? We arrest them, they are jailed, in some instances, executed. We immediately identify them as crazy. You know, Ashcroft is going to say,
wait a second, George. God has been talking to me. God told me. Not you. God told me. These people are crazy.
They're coming to take me away, ha-ha. They're coming to take me away, ho-ho, hee-hee, ha-ha.
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
They're coming to take me away.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
I close my eyes only for a moment, and the moment's gone. All my dreams pass before my eyes in curiosity.
Welcome back. It's Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, bringing you Uncommon Sense from the Radical Middle. We're speaking this hour with Ambassador Mark Palmer, the author of Breaking the Real Axis of Evil, a thought-provoking book suggesting democracy can bring peace to the planet. And Ambassador Palmer, you on page 18, you've got a chart, free countries, not free countries, 46%. 1972, free countries were 29%. Of the population of the planet. In 2002, free countries were up to 46%, almost half, and the free and partly free became a solid majority, roughly 75, 78%, something like that, 75%. I've seen a few arguments, articles, whatnot, that suggest that just in the past two decades, this trend toward increasing democracy around the world that has been going on basically since World War II, you could track it back to the beginning of the 20th century, with increasing pace, has actually slowed down and even reversed. Are you seeing that, or are these folks wrong?
No, I don't think it may have slowed a little bit, but it certainly hasn't reversed. Freedom House, which I'm vice chairman of the board, we do an annual report in year 2002, or the last period that we covered. We saw roughly 26 countries moving in the right direction and only about 11 that had done some reversal, with the remainder staying more or less where they were. So we still think that from an empirical point of view that progress is being made. When I started working on my book, there were 45 dictators, and as I finished, there were only 43. So I think things are continuing to move in the right direction. But
that's
the
great
purpose of the book, of course, is to reaccelerate the process, particularly in the Middle East and in China, which make up the bulk of the peoples that are still living under dictators.
Freedom House, do you have a website?
Yes, it's freedomhouse.org.
That makes sense. That's great. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number if you have a question you'd like to ask. Jim in Mount Vernon, Illinois is on the line with a question for Ambassador Palmer. Jim, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, thank you for your show, Tom.
You're welcome.
I do have a serious question for the guest, and we had an illegal election in this country in December of 2000, just like the people of Georgia, and they went in and broke his door down and told him to leave his house. My question is, how much more are the American people going to stand before we descend on Washington and invite this so-called president to leave our house. And don't be diplomatic, please. And I'd love an answer. Thanks.
Thank you, Jim.
I think civil disobedience is an approach that works in all countries, and so, you know, to the extent people feel that our elections, individual elections, are not just, then civil disobedience is warranted.
But we had a situation, for example, this last week in Miami, where $8.5 million of the $87 billion that was appropriated for Iraq was given to via Jeb Bush to the Miami Police Department to create this Star Wars like stormtrooper group, and very well documented. Many people who were totally peaceful in their demonstrations ended up getting the stuffing kicked out of them, shot at with rubber bullets, ears shot off, internal organs injured, dragged into jail, pepper sprayed, pepper gassed, arrested. The president is herding people into free speech zones simply because of the way they look, in some cases as much as a mile away from where the good Republicans are allowed to hold their signs. What's happening in America?
Well, I don't know. I myself was beaten by the police in the civil rights movement in the early 60s, and I've been beaten by the KGB in the Soviet Union. So,
yeah. Ambassador Palmer, I'm going to have to ask you to hold that thought right there, and we'll pick it up on the other side of this break. I'm sorry we have to pay the bills here, but we'll be right back, and we'll pick up Brian in Manchester's call as well. Ambassador Mark Palmer, Breaking the Axis of Evil. We'll be back right after this break.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Ocean water is likely to become more acidic if we keep up our heavy use of fossil fuels. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Ocean water absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and some people hope it will absorb some of the CO2 we generate by burning fossil fuels. But new research suggests too much carbon dioxide could make ocean water more acidic, and the effects on marine life are uncertain. Ken Caldera is a chemical oceanographer for the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. He says the process of CO2 dissolving into the water is completely natural, and the gas and water combine to form carbonic acid. Caldera says when we add more CO2 to the atmosphere, that leads to more carbonic acid in the oceans.
And so large amounts of CO2 are accumulating in the ocean, and it will take many thousands of years for that to be buffered.
Fossil fuels have been the backbone of industrialized society for two centuries. Caldera says if their heavy use continues for centuries into the future, the impacts could be dramatic. He says the oceans will become more acidic than they've been for millions of years. He says the biological impacts of that acidity need more research. For example, it might make it hard for clams and corals to get minerals they need to build their shells.
It's been generally viewed that the uptake of carbon dioxide by the ocean was a good thing, because it took CO2 out of the atmosphere and thereby reduced the Earth load and the rate of climate change. But if the uptake of CO2 itself has adverse chemical effects on marine biota, then it's at best a mixed blessing.
Caldera's research was published in a recent issue of the journal Nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
My fellow Americans, this is Laura Pickles Bush. Some of our weaker citizens suffer an addiction to talk radio that causes them to listen to that Mike Malloy person each night from 9 p.m. to midnight Eastern Time. We suggest you satisfy your Jones by listening to some of our morally upstanding, honest, and ethical talk show hosts like Dr. Laura, G. Gordon Liddy, Oliver North, and Rush Limbaugh. This is Laura Pickles Bush saying, when it comes to the Mike Malloy Show, just say no.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
The best of the rest of the news. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network with our guest ambassador, Mark Palmer, the author of Breaking the Real Axis of Evil, How to Oust the World's Last Dictators by 2025. We were at 45 when Ambassador Palmer wrote his book. We're at 43 now and counting. Ambassador Palmer, well, I have a question for you, but actually Brian has been waiting patiently on the line from Manchester, New Hampshire to ask you a question. So, Brian, thanks for calling 1-800-TALK-YES, 1-800-825-5937, and welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon, gentlemen. Yes, I did have a question. I wanted to agree with you, Tom, about the Miami demonstration that was absolutely appalling, that, you know, that this we have, in effect, this President Bush is using the 9-1-1 attacks that he so lazily allowed to happen. He's using the pretext of those attacks to attack his own fellow American citizens who are peacefully demonstrating. It's disgusting.
Well, my concern is the rest of the world is looking at this and going, oh, that's what democracy is.
No, that's the polar opposite of
no, but that's what I mean. I mean, you know, Ambassador Palmer here is suggesting we need to spread this around the world. And as he pointed out in the 60s, we perhaps presented a poor example. I think we're doing it again. But your question.
Okay.
Your question.
To ask the doctor about Iraq, about how best you could never have a velvet revolution against Saddam Hussein. You couldn't overthrow him peacefully. I wouldn't say that.
Actually, he suggested that in his book. Is that your question? We'll get right to it.
No. My question is how do you feel about the logical approach to me would be with, first of all, there was 3 million exiles from Iraq, from Saddam's dictatorship, and out of those 3 million Iraqis, you could get at least 3 or 4 divisions of 40 or 50,000 able-bodied young Iraqi men to fight for their own country. If we could train them, we had the bases set up in Hungary to do that. And also with our psychological operations, we could recruit, like the way they did the Iraqi generals by this secret radio broadcast or internet or whatever, to have them, they told them to just surrender or lay down your arms, take off your uniforms and go home. They did that, and now some of them are guerrillas now. But we could recruit the Iraqi army to overthrow Saddam Hussein themselves, and there would be Iraqi troops right now patrolling.
Got it, Brian. Thank you. And in fact, Brian, you illustrate a good question, Ambassador, that you answer very well in your book, and I'd love to have you address this on the air. And that is, why is it that violence doesn't produce democracy anywhere near as effectively and in fact generally not at all, as does passive or civil disobedience or a peaceful nonviolent response produces democracy?
Well, generally, when you have military or guerrillas take power through coups or in the way the caller is suggesting, the technique that they use to gain power is what they're familiar with. That's the way they're organized. And after they've got power, they, as all human beings, want to retain power. They want to stay in power, and they use those same means. They use violent means to stay in power. So historically, violent overthrows of regimes have ended up just in new forms of dictatorship, whereas regimes that have been overthrown through nonviolence, which requires the process of a nonviolent movement, requires consensus building, it requires flexibility and compromise, And once a nonviolent movement takes power, it continues to encourage nonviolent means of decision making, that is, democratic means of decision making. So there's tremendous evidence that nonviolence is the right way to go. It's worked on every continent, and it can work in those places that remain dictatorships, even the ones like it was with Saddam Hussein, where you have very cruel leaders. The degree of cruelty is not the issue.
Yeah, even though, I mean, there was an uprising against him after the first Gulf War, and he
But it was an armed uprising, and that was the mistake that she has made. If they had organized initially in the underground the way Solidarity did in Poland and so many other movements had, and then had gone into the streets in a nonviolent way, I think they could have gotten rid of him. If they'd organized the oil field workers, for example, which were in the Shia areas, the Sunnis actually don't have so much oil in the center of the country.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the north where the Kurds are and in the south where the Shia are. That's where the oil is. And if you shut off the oil through a nonviolent people's movement, he would have come down in very quick order.
Yeah,
we have the same situation in North Korea. People look at North Korea and they say Kim Jong-il is terribly cruel. You couldn't possibly get rid of him through nonviolent movement. But in my judgment and that of a number of North Korean defectors, he's extremely fragile and could be brought down without a single shot being fired.
And in fact, that leads to a great point that you make in your book. You draft a two-stage campaign to oust a dictator. First of all, I'd like you to outline this for our listeners. And secondly, don't you think that this could be used for any political movement?
Absolutely. And the first stage is really just to get organized, to recognize that. And one of the people who was involved in Georgia just last week said the equivalent in real estate where location, 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 he said, organization, organization, organization. The key is to get organized. You cannot have a grand goal and move immediately to try to achieve it unless you've done your homework first, unless you've got a cell structure set up underground, unless you have printing plants, unless you've got the means to communicate among one another, unless you've done some initial actions. And so the first stage is organization. Then the second stage is to actually create an alternative society.
May I interrupt you?
Yeah.
Your first stage of organization, what happens if that organization is happening in a country where the Attorney General is monitoring you via the FBI, you're being infiltrated, and as we saw again in Miami, there were actually people who were dressed as if they were among the anarchists, you know, wearing the black ski masks, who were then later, after provoking incidents, went over to the side of the police, took off the mask, and turns out they were police officers. I mean, there were several cases, actually a couple that were caught on film. And how can a movement be effective at organizing if it's being sabotaged and infiltrated and exploited? And,
well,
and of course, the way that it's happening here in the United States is
right,
nothing compared
happened,
to how what would have happened in Iraq.
When I was in SNCC and CORE in the civil rights movement in the 60s, we had the same problem. I mean, the FBI was listening into us. I was actually ordered out of cities by the FBI. Mm. So, But the fact is, it worked, and it's worked in many other countries. So, you have to anticipate that there will be infiltration, that there will be all of these techniques that you mentioned used against the movement, and therefore you have to organize in a way that does not allow the whole thing to come down just because one person gets put in jail or because there's one saboteur or one provocation. It needs to be wide enough spread, decentralized, and it takes courage. I mean, this is not something that's easy to do, to bring off. It actually takes more courage than a guerrilla movement.
So the two stages you were talking about.
So the second stage then is to really, once you've got this organization behind you, is to really take control of the society in all ways. For example, taking control of the universities, the schools, the labor unions, the factories, and ultimately then taking to the streets. When I talk to Iraqi generals about getting 5,000 or 10,000 people into the streets of Baghdad against Saddam Hussein, they just laughed and said he'd shoot them down. And then as I escalated the numbers and I said, suppose you could get 100,000 people into the streets of Baghdad, what would happen? And they said the security forces would refuse an order to kill that many people, and Saddam Hussein would be gone in 48 hours.
Right.
So it's partly a question of how to get there, not whether you can get there. It's a question of what level of people power is needed. we saw in Hong Kong recently when 500,000 people went into the streets, they were able basically to face down the Communist Party of China. And so I would say that with 500,000 people in almost any country, you can do it. In Tbilisi in Georgia, it was just done with 50,000.
So it's a matter of there's a particular tipping point, a particular threshold at which
Serbia,
the membrane pops.
500,000 was enough. Milosevic was overthrown not by the U.S. Air Force. He was overthrown by workers from provincial towns, miners, and students. And that's what got rid of Milosevic, without a shot being fired.
Interesting. We're speaking with Ambassador Mark Palmer, who's written a very thought-provoking book. I recommend it highly, Breaking the Real Axis of Evil, How to Oust the World's Last Dictators by 2025. 1-800-TALK-YES is our number, 1-800-825-5937. If you have a question, it's 17 minutes before the hour. And Dan in Maryland is on the line. Hey, Dan, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thanks, Tom. How you doing?
Great. What's up, Dan?
Mr. Palmer first started talking about peaceful takeovers, I thought he was being naive, but then it occurred to me that that's exactly what happened in Iran, and the Shah was as brutal a dictator as you're going to find, you know, when Khomeini first came in there.
Yeah, it's a good point. And Khomeini did that from France by mailing out audio cassettes. I mean, that was the basis of the thing. He was sending thousands of audio cassettes of his weekly sermons into Iran, and he mobilized hundreds of thousands of people.
But it wasn't only Khomeini. I mean, your caller's absolutely right, and it's a great example because it was peaceful. Khomeini, of course, promised the Iranian people that he would bring with him democracy. And the students, you know, I visited Iran a number of times just before he came to power. And the students and others were already organized. I mean, you had Bonnie Sauter. You had a whole lot of people who were not mullahs, who were not involved.
They were Democrats.
Islam, who were Democrats.
Yeah, small D Democrats.
And they got behind him because he promised what they wanted. And then, of course, he abused them. And within a year or 2 years, he had squashed all of the Democrats. So it was really a tragedy that they weren't well enough to organize to resist him. And one of the most interesting things is that his grandchildren now, his granddaughter and grandson, are leading the movement for democratic change inside Iran.
Yeah, yeah, it's fascinating to watch. Dan, was that the point you wanted to make?
I had another question, whether Mr. Palmer was familiar with what the World Trade Organization is doing, because he mentioned corporations taking the lead in installing democracies, and I don't see that as a possibility. With the way the World Trade Organization is being put together and essentially working in a really any democratic way throughout the world.
Its ability to overrule sovereign nations on their own laws.
Right.
Like NAFTA, Article 13 of NAFTA has rolled back so many American laws.
I was very involved in organizing a kind of competing operation called the Community of Democracies, which we persuaded the Clinton administration to support, and we've now had two meetings at the foreign minister's level of about 110 countries. Madeleine Albright co-chaired the first meeting in Warsaw, and I see that, the Community of Democracies, as the eventual answer, not WTO. I think you have to have an organization, both of states and NGOs, that has as its single purpose democracy, and that
So that could not include for-profit NGOs?
In fact, it does not include any for-profit NGOs. That's right. Yeah. We have hundreds of NGOs involved, and none of them are for-profit.
Well, then this raises the question, what's wrong with the United Nations?
Well, I think the fundamental problem with the United Nations is that the democracies haven't worked together within it, and the dictatorships have worked together as a club. And so, for example, in Geneva at the UN Human Rights Commission, the dictatorships worked very closely in defeating resolutions about Burma and China and Saudi Arabia, et cetera. And the democracies basically have sat on their hands. If we can organize as a caucus of democracies within the UN, then I think the UN can achieve its real goals, which include, as Kofi Annan very eloquently and very frequently says, the goal of universal human rights.
Yeah, yeah, excellent. And the... Just a personal question. You were actively involved in the civil rights movement in the South, but later you were speechwriter for Ronald Reagan and Henry Kissinger, who was in the administration that invented the Southern Strategy. Do you see any conflict in that?
Well, I certainly, I mean, I was a career Foreign Service officer when I was doing those things, and so I worked with whoever the American people put in political office. Henry Kissinger and I, it may seem paradoxical to your listeners, but we profoundly disagreed about democracy. I thought it was the answer to problems around the world, and Henry really did not. He was an old 19th century rail politician. He's still that way. He believes that stability is the highest good. I believe change is the highest good. So we had vigorous debates. Of course, he won those debates because he was the boss. But,
he was the boss, yeah.
Whereas Ronald Reagan was really very different. Reagan was a radical. Kissinger was a conservative. Reagan believed in change and believed that all people could have democracy someday. So I liked working for Ronald Reagan in that sense. And he was somebody who was willing to give speeches that I wrote that argued passionately for freedom. And President Bush gave an equally good speech recently on November 6th, in which he said our policy toward the Middle East for 60 years has supported dictators, and that was wrong. That was a really revolutionary thing for him to say.
Do you? And yet, you know, we're using force to overthrow the Iraqi government. Do you see the peace coming out of this? Do you see democracy coming out of this?
Well, one hopes. As we've discussed, that was not my preferred way of dealing with the problem that the Iraqi people had. And I don't believe it's the right thing to do with Syria or Iran or any of the other places, which is the situation of all of the, unfortunately, all the Arabs face these corrupt, awful leaders. I don't think that's the right approach. I don't think that invading a country and overthrowing its rulers is the best way to bring democracy.
And not on a moral basis, just on a purely practical basis.
Right. Well, both bases.
I mean, it is moral, but it's...
And practically, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
You really have to let the people of a country do this, but there are ways to help them do it.
That's great. And you've identified those in your book. Ambassador Mark Palmer, thank you very much for being on our program today.
Thank you.
Thank you. I truly appreciate your joining us. Breaking the Real Axis of Evil. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Truth in Broadcasting. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is Eric Muller reporting from Chopper 5.
Cut!
News happens fast. Can I afford to let a cold slow me down? Not up here. When I'm achy, with a stuffy nose and a sore throat, I take Advil Cold and Sinus. It's got the power of Advil to handle tough pain, plus a hard-working decongestant. That's why they call it Advil Cold and Sinus.
Quick, over to the highway!
I call it fast relief for a reporter on the fly.
For tough colds, advance to Advil Cold and Sinus. Use as directed.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
This season, don't just give a gift. Give the good life at the Thanksgiving weekend sale at Sears. All weekend, save big throughout the store. Plus, this Friday, come into Sears from 6 to 11 a.m. and save 50% off hundreds of items, from electronics to fine jewelry, including our lowest price ever on a Sylvania Combination TV-DVD player, just $129.99. Can't wait for the holidays? Then hurry into Sears and save big. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. This holiday, give the good life. Sears. Good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 11/28/03.
John Madden here to tell you about the Big Ace Hardware one-day sale happening this Friday, November 28th. Get great stuff to decorate your home, like a big 6-foot light and spiral tree for only $9.99, or pre-lit deer silhouettes for your lawn for just $12.99 each. This is one sale you don't want to miss, so drop by your neighborhood Ace this Friday. Doors open at 7 a.m., so make plans to shop early. Ace, the helpful place. Quantities may be limited and are available at participating Ace stores. Rebates void in Connecticut.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
First appearance of Superman in Action Comics number 1, $400,000. First appearance of Batman in Detective Comics number 27, $350,000. First appearance of Spider-Man in Amazing Fantasy 15, $50,000. Listening to that comic book show and envisioning two fat guys in tights, priceless.
Listen to that comic book show Sundays from 9 p.m. to 10 Eastern on the IE America Radio Network.
Show.
We are very lucky tonight to have joining us from California, Geneva, BartCop.com's resident astrologer. Can you tell us anything about George W. Bush's chart?
There was a lot of stuff in his chart. He's got a lot of aspects on his own that would indicate that he would be easily maneuvered into being a puppet, a front man, or people who have more of a scheme in mind like that.
He is a very weak man when you get right down to it, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
Extremely weak-willed. What sort of looming obstacles might keep Bush from being reelected? Is he going to face some sort of impeachment, criminal charges? Can you elaborate?
Well, that would be nice. I mean,
yeah, it would.
If they did it to Clinton with as little as they had to go on.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, why not?
The Mike Malloy Show, Monday through Friday from 9 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Yes, me friend, me friend, them set me free again. Yes, me friend, me friend, me dead on the streets again.
And welcome back, my friends. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone, high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, this is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our quote for the day from President Calvin Coolidge: no nation ever had an army large enough to guarantee it against attack in time of peace or ensure it victory in time of war. And then a kind of a flipping that just a little bit, John Stuart Mill: whatever crushes individuality is despotism, no matter what name it is called. Did you see this thing? And this was Brainshrub, one of the regulars in our chat room. Brainshrub had posted this in his daily news thing here, and which is what pointed me to it first. It's on Yahoo News. Man gets spam rage over penis enlargement ads. A Silicon Valley computer programmer has been arrested for threatening to torture and kill employees of the company he blames for bombarding his computer with web ads promising to enlarge his penis. In one of the first prosecutions of its kind in the state that made road rage famous, Charles Boer, 44, was arrested on Thursday and released on bail for making repeated threats against the Canadian company. Boer threatened to send a package full of anthrax spores to the company, to disable an employee with a bullet, and torture him with a power drill and ice pick, and to hunt down and castrate the employees unless they removed him from their email list, prosecutors said. He used the return email, by the way, of satan@hell.org in sending his threats to this company. Apparently, however, although it's sometimes hard to figure out who the spammers are, when you flame back at them, they can figure out how you are, because this guy is now facing 5 years in prison and $250,000 fine for making these threats against these spammers. They point out he didn't have any guns. He's not a violent guy. He has no background of it. He's just this guy who lives in Sunnydale, California, and just went nuts over all this spam he was getting. He says his inbox was disabled by it. It was enough. Oh, my goodness. I think the post office ought to take this over. I actually have a solution for spam. Let the post office take it over and let us all pay a penny every time we send an email. I would do it. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network, straight to the heart of truth.
Tiananmen Square. It's coming from the field that this ain't exactly real, or it's real, but it ain't exactly there. From the war against disorder, from sirens night and day, from the fires of the...
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Copyright 2003.
On Nancy's face.
What's she doing?
I asked her if she wanted a boogie, and she just gave me this condescending sneer.
Is it the condescending, I don't boogie?
How would I keep up with her?
Right.
Boogieing.
Nancy can boogie. Yeah. Doug, I've never seen you dance.
Kind of looks like a frog in a blender.
I could dance with you till the cows come home. On second thought, I'd rather dance with the cows than you come home.
On the IE America Radio Network.
For the latest in cutting-edge technology, computers, entertainment, and much more, tune into tomorrow here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the interactive radio program with experts featuring new technology and the latest consumer electronics. Check out our internet site anytime at graveline.com and join us live this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific on the IE America Radio Network.
This is the IE America Radio Network News Break, your significant news source.
This is Don Waller in New York. Guerrillas fired rockets at the headquarters of the U.S.-led administration in central Baghdad on Tuesday, and loudspeakers ordered personnel in the compound to take cover as explosions echoed across the Iraqi capital. Sirens wailed, flares lit up the night sky, and U.S. helicopters clattered overhead. A spokesman for the 1st Armored Division, which patrols Baghdad, said at least two rockets had been fired. One crashed through the roof of an empty apartment building near the coalition compound, and another landed near a bus station. There were no reports of U.S. soldiers being injured or of civilian casualties. The Pentagon's plan for replacing the 130,000 American troops in Iraq with a fresh contingent early next year will shrink the force by 20%, but it will place more of the combat burden on the National Guard and Reserve. If carried out as planned, the switch-out will result in a more mobile force, perhaps better suited to the guerrilla-style war that is taking a sobering toll in U.S. deaths and injuries. The Army is calling on the National Guard and Reserve to contribute more next year, and not just in supporting roles. Three Guard infantry brigades will be there, of which at least two will see combat. Civil rights groups complained Tuesday that police at last week's trade talks in Miami abused protesters, some senior citizens, by arresting them without cause and denying them restrooms, water, and phones. Meanwhile, the National Steelworkers Union called for a congressional investigation and the removal of Miami Police Chief John Timoney over the treatment of its members during the protest, and several groups said they will sue the city. The union sent a letter to congressional leaders late Monday criticizing police. The letter also criticized the use of federal money, $8.5 million was allocated, for Miami's security cost, calling it money for homeland repression. More IE American Network news after this.
I'm Oscar Davis. You may have a serious eye condition and not even know it. Vision loss is not a normal part of aging. Some vision changes are normal. Some are due to eye disease. Do you know the difference? Open your eyes to the facts. To get more information about vision and aging, or find out about what help is available if you're having vision problems, call Lighthouse International at 1-800-829-0500 or visit www.lighthouse.org.
A new turkey and gravy soda tastes, well, pretty much like you would imagine, but that's not stopping people from buying it. The liquid's ominous murky brown color accurately warns consumers about the taste, a mix of sweet caramel and savory lard. The manufacturer of the so-called soda suggested a retail price of 99 cents, but a few entrepreneurs are selling theirs on eBay.com. By Tuesday, the bidding was up to $63 for a two-bottle set. For IE American Network News, this is Don Waller in New York.
This has been the IE America Radio Network News Break, produced by TakeBackTheMedia.com. For more information, visit IEAmericaRadio.com or TakeBackTheMedia.com.
This season, don't just give a gift, give the good life at the Thanksgiving weekend sale at Sears. All weekend, save big throughout the store. Plus, this Friday, come into Sears from 6 to 11 a.m. and save 50% off hundreds of items, from electronics to fine jewelry, including our lowest price ever on a Sylvania combination TV-DVD player, just $129.99. Can't wait for the holidays? Then hurry into Sears and save big. Find us online at Sears.com or at America Online, keyword Sears. This holiday, give the good life. Sears, good life, great price. Exclusions apply. See store for details. Sale ends 11/28/03.
If insanity could be packaged, Monsanto would surely own the patent. This biotech giant is insanely manipulating the genetics of our world's food supply without long-term testing of how these frankenfoods will affect human health or our environment. Monsanto maniacally pushes these products without even informing consumers that the very DNA of the foodstuffs they're eating has been artificially altered in its corporate laboratories, literally using us as its guinea pigs. And, like a foam-at-the-mouth mad dog, Monsanto attacks anyone who dares get in the way of its genetic profiteering. Oakhurst Dairy in Portland, Maine has seen Monsanto's madness in action. It's a small milk processor that tries to do business the old-fashioned way, giving consumers what they want. Or, in this case, not giving consumers what they don't want, which is milk laced with Monsanto's artificial growth hormone, which has been linked to causing everything from premature puberty in children to health problems in cows injected with it. Overwhelmingly, consumers say they don't want this stuff in their milk, so Oakhurst Dairy started paying dairy farmers a premium for milk that's certified to be free of it. Oakhurst proudly labels its jugs with this promise: no artificial growth hormones. Enter the raw nuttiness of Monsanto, which has now sued Oakhurst, claiming that its label deceives consumers by making them think that the pure milk is healthier than milk with Monsanto's hormones. In fact, all Oakhurst is doing is letting customers know what's not in their product, so customers can make up their own minds which milk to buy. As Oakhurst's president puts it, we're in the business of marketing milk, not Monsanto's drugs. Besides, he says, the world seems a little bit discombobulated when someone attempts to prohibit you from doing the right thing. This is Jim Hightower saying, to help stop Monsanto, call the Organic Consumers Association, 218-226-4164.
The Mr. Rogers Parenting Book. Fred Rogers, a pleasure to have you here.
What I'm hearing you say is that you delight in creating community.
I do. I think thinking about things and working through problems and issues is an important tool.
I'm just thinking that the world could take some lessons from the Doug Steffen neighborhood.
Doug Steffen's good.
America Radio Network.
Providing you with informative and entertaining programs, this is the IE America Radio Network.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, this is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman. To talk with Tom Hartman, call 1-800-TALK-YES. Here's Tom.
And welcome back. It's Tom Hartman defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception here on the IE America Radio Network. The folks have asked about alternatives to AARP. I just want to get a couple of these down. There's two good ones that I know of. The first is the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. I've joined both of them, by the way. Being over 50, I qualify, I guess. And ncpssm.org, as in National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare.org. They have 3 million members, and they're an advocacy group just for preserving Social Security and Medicare. And they're, of course, very upset with what just happened. And then the other group that does not sell insurance or, you know, things like that, the AARP has essentially morphed itself, in my opinion, into an insurance agent. You know, it's been some years, but remember when insurance agents used to come knocking on your doors and, you know, friends would become, they'd get a job as an insurance agent and suddenly they'd become obnoxious. It was sort of like, you know, insurance was the MLM of the 1950s and 60s and early 70s. And the AARP has turned into that weird guy next door who sells insurance to everybody, and that's all he wants to talk about whenever you get together. And so a lot of folks are saying, hey, enough of this. The AARP has, you know, they've hired as their CEO the guy who whose ad agency put together the Harry and Louise ads that put an end to health care reform in the Clinton administration. And they've sold out the corporate powers. It certainly seems from this end of the table here. And so a lot of people are going to retiredamericans.org, the Alliance for Retired Americans, www.retiredamericans.org. And between retiredamericans.org and the unfortunately named ncpssm.org, these guys must have been doing most of their business by mail, because that's just they've got to come up with a better URL, something that can be remembered. Anyhow, between these two, and they both charge $10 a month for membership, there are some very good advocacy groups out there for Medicare and for Social Security. And these are issues that are growing, and you may think, well, this doesn't affect me. I'm only 25 years old. Someday it will, I promise you. You know, God willing, you live long enough, and let's hope we all do. The Making of the President, the Nixon and Bush. This has the conservative. They are so upset about this. I mean, it's just the last thing that the cons want George W. Bush to be portrayed at as is Nixonian. They love it that he's portrayed as Ronald Reagan, because they have, you know, by and large succeeded in helping the public forget that in the early 80s, Reagan pushed through the largest tax cut in the history of America, which wasn't a tax cut. One of the biggest con jobs. I mean, this is, you know, George W. Bush, or George H.W. Bush, called it voodoo economics, and he was spot on. He pushed through a tax cut that was actually a tax deferral, but he succeeded in duping the American public and the press into calling it a tax cut. It was actually borrowing money from our children and handing it to mostly defense contractors, because at the same time he was doing the tax cut, he ran up a $3 trillion debt in his Star Wars, this very aggressive Star Wars program. You remember? All that money going to Hughes and to all the military contractors. I don't know what the Carlyle Group was doing back then, but, you know, that bunch. And the vast right-wing echo machine has succeeded in producing a national amnesia. No, Ronald Reagan produced the fastest growing economy in the history of America. Well, yes. Of course. I can make your family have an incredibly fast-growing family economy if I hand you a credit card with a million-dollar credit limit and say, please, go spend this. But the time comes, you have to pay for it. And Reagan had his boom in 84, 85, got him reelected, as Bush is betting this little boomlet will, being, you know, driven by the same thing. And then came the terrible inflation and recession. And Greenspan had to crank up the interest rates to put the screeching brakes on it. And George Herbert Walker Bush inherited the disaster that Ronald Reagan created and lost his bid to have two terms as a result of it. Bill Clinton took it in. The first 2 years of his administration were terrible. But he actually said, okay, we're going to face the music, and raised taxes so that we were actually paying taxes that were equal to the amount that we were spending. And we had the first balanced budget since Jimmy Carter. And now this guy, George Walker Bush, our current resident of the White House, is repeating Ronald. So everybody to think of him as Reagan, but this piece by Dana Milbank in the Washington Post that he's really Richard Nixon is fascinating. There's a lot of parallels to this I'd like to draw for you and share some insights into this. 1-800-TALK-YES, by the way, is the number of this telephone number for our program, 1-800-825-5937. And if you have thoughts on this topic, you are welcome to call. And Sandra in Alaska is on the line. Hey, Sandra, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Good morning.
Good morning. Where in Alaska are you?
Just outside Anchorage, the Air Force Base at Elmendorf.
Ah, it's great. Welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, actually, I was looking for Marianne Williamson.
Oh, well, she'll be on in another hour.
Okay.
So.
I'd love to put some input on this, but I really don't have anything at this time.
Okay, thanks, Sandra.
Okay,
thanks for calling, and John, who's catching our phone calls, heads up. 1-800-TALK-YES, our number. The president was okay. Here's what happened in the Washington Post: the making of the president, the Nixon and Bush. The first two paragraphs. This is great. The president tells aides he wants to, quote, go over the heads of the reporters, end quote, in order to, quote, circumvent a hostile press, end quote. He later describes his effort, quote, to tell my story directly to the people rather than funnel it to them through a press account, end quote. The year? 1969. The president? Richard Nixon. Nixon historian David Greenberg is the guy who has, you know, come up with this stuff. He says, ideologically, Bush is the son of Reagan. Stylistically, he's the son of Nixon. He's just published a book titled Nixon's Shadow. The article by Dana Milbank goes on to say, Bush, for example, structures his White House much as Nixon did. You know, most presidents before Nixon, including John Kennedy, had a strong cabinet. I mean, going all the way back to George Washington. I mean, George Washington had a really strong cabinet. He had, you know, Thomas Jefferson as Secretary of State and Alexander Hamilton as Secretary of the Treasury, as I recall, and a remarkable cabinet. And Nixon, on the other hand, created the what today is referred to as the Iron Triangle. He had basically four guys that he depended on: Henry Kissinger, H.R. Haldeman, John D. Ehrlichman, and Charles Colson. And these four ran the world from the White House, or at least that part of the world that America was capable of influencing or threatening or cajoling or whatever. And Bill Clinton went back to having a strong cabinet, and now we've got, which you know, frankly, is I think more democratic, more likely to produce the good results of democracy, which is the minimizing the probability of a small number of people making the wrong or the wrong decision. When you look at democracy in animals, you see that it works very, very well. That in a herd of animals, you know, it's a, which direction are we going to go? Well, some of the animals will point north, some will point south, some east, some west. And when a certain critical mass is reached, 51% or so, pointing a particular way, then boom, the whole herd just goes. And you see this with birds and schools of fish in just absolutely incredibly fast movements. But just tiny, tiny motions. But in larger mammals, it's much larger motions. But anyhow, you see democracy working in animals. And this idea of having a large group of people, or the larger group of people making decisions, means that your decisions are more likely going to be, you know, less destructive. And so here we have this Nixon White House, or this George H.W. Bush, or George W. Bush White House now, that basically has devolved into this small bunch of people. In fact, here this is really great. This is they're quoting this is Dana Milbank in the Washington Post quoting from Greenberg's book about Nixon. And part of it's Washington Post, part of it's Greenberg. He says, during the late days of the Watergate scandal, as the White House mood grew funereal, Greenberg writes, a George Mason University, quote, circulated memos from a faux grassroots Americans for the Presidency, urging phone calls to the Judiciary Committee, congressmen. Oh, to the Judiciary Committee. Congressmen, they warned, these memos that they would be being passed out by this George Mason University student. Congressmen were getting, quote, swept up by the lynch mob atmosphere created in the city by the Washington Post and other parts of the Nixon-hating media, end quote. This was Watergate. The student who was circulating this memo, who was doing this pamphleteering, was Karl Rove. Back during the Nixon White House. And this whole idea of secrecy, of managing the news, of being on point, of having your talking points, it's really quite remarkable. And of just, you know, nailing it. I mean, saying this is the, for example. The secrecy, for example, former Senator Max Cleland. I want to share some just startling details with you about this right after this break. But former Senator Max Cleland, a Democrat, has been nominated by President Bush to serve on the board of the Export-Import Bank. This is a UPI story from the 23rd of this month, last week. As a result, he will have to leave the commission investigating the September 11 terror attacks. The former United States Senator from Georgia, distinguished senator and patriot, Max Cleland, and he has been making some loud noises lately, and now President Bush has figured out how to get rid of him. And this Nixonian secrecy thing, I'll tell you about it right after this break. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Our program brought to you by Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX, 1-800-511-6227. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Did you know that grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't.
But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. But judge for yourself. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. And we will send you a free sampler. Yes, a free sampler. Two full-size bottles delivered to your doorstep for a $10 shipping cost only. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
John Madden here to tell you about the Big Ace Hardware one-day sale happening this Friday, November 28th. Get great stuff to decorate your home, like a big 6-foot light and spiral tree for only $9.99, or pre-lit deer silhouettes for your lawn for just $12.99 each. This is one sale you don't want to miss, so drop by your neighborhood Ace this Friday. Doors open at 7 a.m., so make plans to shop early. Ace, the helpful place. Quantities may be limited and are available at participating Ace stores. Rebates void in Connecticut.
If you're looking for the latest in cutting-edge technology and the products that everyone is talking about, tune into tomorrow right here on the IE America Radio Network every Sunday from 2 to 5 p.m. Eastern Time. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Pacific. Hi, this is Dave Graveline. Into Tomorrow is the highly interactive radio program with experts featuring the latest in consumer electronics, technology, computers, and the Internet. We cover all things cool, like digital photography and video, home theater and audio, home automation, gadgets and gizmos, the technology of making music, computer peripherals, HDTV, DVD, MP3s, car audio, navigation and security, and lots more. If it draws current, we talk about it. Let us bring you into tomorrow. Check out our website anytime at graveline.com and join us this Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern, 11 a.m. Pacific, here on the IE America Radio Network.
We have this representative sampling from yesterday addressed to Dudley Do-Right.
Yes, sir, Inspector.
You must be a miserable person. You think everybody is out to screw you. You don't like the Republicans, George W., government authority, police, fire, CIA, FBI, NSA, phone companies, airlines, successful people. The list goes on and on and on and on and on.
On the IE America Radio Network.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
When the night has come and the land is dark and the moon is the only light we'll see.
Back. It's talk radio for the rest of us. The Tom Hartman Radio Program on the IE America Radio Network. Oh, remarkable stuff. Remember Spiro Agnew? Good old Spiro, you know, talking about the press. The problem is the press. Whenever you hear an administration talking about the problem is the press, you know you've got an administration that has a problem that is the administration.
As with other American institutions, perhaps it is time that the networks were made more responsive to the views of the nation and more responsible to the people they serve.
This is Spiro Agnew in 1969 ranting about the press.
I want to make myself perfectly clear. I'm not asking for government censorship or any other kind of censorship. I'm asking whether a form of censorship already exists when the news that 40 million Americans... When the news that 40 million Americans receive each night is determined by a handful of men responsible only to their corporate employers and is filtered through a handful of commentators who admit to their own set of biases.
Yep, Spiro Agnew complaining, ironically, in the same breath about corporate ownership of the media and liberal bias in the media. And you know, it's a duck that doesn't swim, but they're trying it again. So we've got this 9/11 commission, and the chairman Thomas H. Keene. Let me just give this to you chronologically. October 26th. This is in the New York Times. This was, you know, about a month ago today, isn't it? The chairman Thomas H. Keene, chairman of the 9/11 commission, the former Republican governor of New Jersey, also said in an interview on Friday that he believed the bipartisan 10-member commission would soon be forced to issue subpoenas to other executive branch agencies, executive branch as in, you know, having to do with the presidency, the White House. Issue subpoenas because of continuing delays by the Bush administration in providing documents and other evidence needed by the panel. The New York Times says that the White House is continuing to withhold several highly classified intelligence documents from the panel. So here you've got this guy, Thomas Keene, and he says, any document that has to do with this investigation cannot be beyond our reach. Wouldn't be right. Wouldn't be democratic. Wouldn't be good. This institution was created to look into what happened on 9/11. And whenever they try, the Bush White House says no, it can't.
At Animal Talk, we think deep thoughts. We think about things that most people don't think about, such as, do dogfish chase catfish? Do jellyfish taste good with peanut butter? These are things that bother us. Why is it that Donald Duck doesn't wear any pants, but when he comes out of the shower, he wraps a towel around his waist?
Dude, you need a hobby.
Oh.
Animal Talk, Sunday nights on the IE America Radio Network.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on the IE America Radio Network.
Ocean water is likely to become more acidic if we keep up our heavy use of fossil fuels. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Ocean water absorbs a lot of carbon dioxide from the atmosphere, and some people hope it will absorb some of the CO2 we generate by burning fossil fuels. But new research suggests too much carbon dioxide could make ocean water more acidic, and the effects on marine life are uncertain. Ken Caldera is a chemical oceanographer for the Lawrence Livermore National Laboratory. He says the process of CO2 dissolving into the water is completely natural, and the gas and water combine to form carbonic acid. Caldera says when we add more CO2 to the atmosphere, that leads to more carbonic acid in the oceans.
And so large amounts of CO2 are accumulating in the ocean, and it will take many thousands of years for that to be buffered.
Fossil fuels have been the backbone of industrialized society for two centuries. Caldera says if their heavy use continues for centuries into the future, the impacts could be dramatic. He says the oceans will become more acidic than they've been for millions of years. He says the biological impacts of that acidity need more research. For example, it might make it hard for clams and corals to get minerals they need to build their shells.
It's been generally viewed that the uptake of carbon dioxide by the ocean was a good thing, because it took CO2 out of the atmosphere and thereby reduced the or slowed the rate of climate change. But if the uptake of CO2 itself has adverse chemical effects on marine biota, then it's at best a mixed blessing.
Caldera's research was published in a recent issue of the journal Nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Animal Talk, helping you with your pets and talking to celebrities, like from The Cosby Show and the Dr. Dolittle movies, Raven Simone. Do you have any pets of your own?
I do. I have two chinchillas and I have a big Briard.
Do you train your dog?
I don't. I just give him love and take him out, so he better love me because I have to wake up at 4 o'clock in the morning.
So here you are, Charisse Dolittle, who talks to the animals, and you don't even train your own dog. Nothing but love.
Nothing but love. All they need is love.
Animal Talk, Saturdays and Sundays on the IE America Radio Network.
This is Mike Malloy with the IE America Radio Network. Want to know more about our talk shows and personalities but don't know where to look? Do you want to find out what guests are scheduled or what topics we'll be discussing on our programs? Would you like to participate in live chat or vote in interactive polls? All this and more is available at the IE America Radio website. Bookmark it, stop surfing, and get active. Visit www.ieamericaradio.com today.
Best of the rest of the news, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Zone with Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. Sorry we got disconnected briefly there in mid-rant. Occasionally technology fails. I'm here in Vermont. The network is in Detroit. The satellite's up in the sky. The radio stations are scattered all over the country. And the link between us here in Vermont and the network in Detroit burped on us. And from time to time that happens. We're trying to make it as reliable as we can. But anyhow, and so I'm not actually sure where I dropped off, where I vanished. But as I was, the point that I was making was that the 9/11 Commission we're talking about has George Bush morphed himself, has the ghost of Richard Nixon reached out his cold, bony fingers from the grave and grabbed the heart and soul of George W. Bush, or were they simply born as clones? And this penchant for secrecy. The chairman of the 9/11 Commission, Thomas H. Keene, the former Republican governor in New Jersey, back in October 26th, said he was going to subpoena the White House. He's going to have a court go. He's going to get a judge involved in this thing. We're going to get these guys. We're going to get these documents. He says, "I will not stand for it." I mean, that's a verbatim quote. Then it turns out 2 weeks later that he would stand for it. The commission investigating the September 11 terror attacks, this from a New York Times article on November 14th, deal of 9/11 briefings lets White House edit papers. The commission investigating the September 11 terror attacks said on Thursday that its deal with the White House for access to highly classified Oval Office intelligence reports would let the White House edit the documents before they were released to the commission's representatives. The agreement announced on Wednesday has led to the first public split in the commission. Now, this is where it starts to get interesting. The White House, here again, the New York Times, the White House would be able to remove information from the reports that they're going to submit to the commission. In other words, you've got these presidential daily briefings. And the White House is saying, well, you know, we've got these presidential daily briefings, and they cover a lot of topics. I mean, not just 9/11. There's discussions in there about Iran and Iraq and Syria and Mexico and bloody blah, right? The daily briefings for the president. And there, in particular, is one apparently from August that everybody's interested in, because apparently in that daily briefing, although nobody knows for sure because the White House hasn't released it, but the word is that in that daily briefing, the president was notified several weeks before 9/11 that Al-Qaeda was in the country and planning to hijack airplanes and run them into buildings in New York and Washington. And the president did nothing about it except leave town. He went to Texas, went to his ranchlet. He's afraid of horses, of course, so it's not quite a ranch. And he kind of talks like he was raised on a ranch. He actually bought it once he became president because it would look good. He was raised in mansions. And just hung out in Texas, took the longest presidential vacation in the history of the United States. And then, after the vacation was over, he still didn't want to go back to Washington, so he's down in Florida when the planes hit the towers and the Pentagon and Pennsylvania. So anyhow, here we are, November 14th, the White House cuts a deal with the commission. And they say, okay, you can read the presidential daily reports, but you can only read those portions that we give you. And we're not going to let you look over the stuff that doesn't have to do with 9/11. And you're just going to have to trust us that the stuff about 9/11 hasn't been redacted or edited. Now, former Representative Tim Romer of Indiana, former U.S. Congressman, now a member of the commission, just went ballistic. He says, under these terms, the White House would have the ability to edit out or to hide any, quote, smoking guns. This is from the New York Times, end quote. And then they go on to say, the other Democratic critic on the panel, former Senator Max Cleland of Georgia, has described the agreement as unconscionable. And then the New York Times goes on to say, administration officials have acknowledged that they are concerned that intelligence reports received by Mr. Bush in the weeks before 9/11 might be construed to suggest that the White House failed to respond to evidence suggesting that Al-Qaeda was planning a catastrophic attack. The White House acknowledged last year in response to news reports that a copy of the daily brief in August of 2001 noted that Al-Qaeda might use hijacked planes in an attack. So the press can know about it, but the commission can't get the details. So then Max Cleland gets interviewed on Salon.com on November 21st. And the interview was done a little bit before that. It was published on November 21st. So we're up to last week, this week, I mean this time period here. Today, Cleland has emerged as one of the president's harshest critics. As he scanned the headlines from Baghdad, he says, quote, I feel like I have been duped. I don't mind telling you. Everybody in the administration was selling this used car, that being the war in Iraq. The problem is all the wheels have fallen off the car and we got a lemon. Meanwhile, the article by Eric Bollert in Salon.com goes on to say, title of the article, The President Ought to Be Ashamed, says, as one of 10 commissioners serving on the independent panel created by Congress to investigate the 9/11 attacks, Cleland bemoans the administration's Nixonian love of secrecy
an attempt to slow walk the commission into irrelevancy. We shouldn't be making deals, Cleland complains. If somebody wants to deal, we issue subpoenas. That's the deal. So they ask him. They said, you know, let's start with this 9/11 commission. What are your concerns about dealing with the White House? And these are Max Cleland's words. He says, first of all, as someone who co-sponsored legislation creating the 9/11 commission against great opposition from the White House, this independent commission should be independent and should not be making deals with anybody. I start from there. It's been painfully obvious the administration not only fought the creation of the commission, but that their objective was the war on Iraq and not the one that... And one of the notions that was built on there was a direct connection between Al-Qaeda and 9/11 and Saddam Hussein, and there was not. So therefore, we don't want the 9/11 commission to get going. They didn't want the 9/11 commission to get going. What you have is the fear from the White House that the commission would uncover pretty quickly the fact that one of four legs that the war was stood on was non-existent. So they slow walked it, and they continue to slow walk it. I would add, just as they are the Karl Rove leaking, or somebody under his direction leaking Valerie Plame's name to Bob Novak, back to Max Cleland, they want to kick this can down past the elections. I would add, just like they did the Medicare thing, you know, it doesn't take effect until 2006. We should not be making any deals, Max Cleland says. We should stick to our original timetable of completing the final report by May. However, we're coming up on Thanksgiving here, and we're still struggling over access issues. This should be a national scandal. This from one of the most respected United States senators, former now Saxby Chambliss, as a result, apparently, of a voting machine error in the state of Georgia, where the voting machines apparently logged Democratic votes as Republican and Republican votes as Democratic votes. There seems to be some evidence of that, and I certainly believe that. Saxby Chambliss is the senator now, not Max Cleland, but nonetheless, here we have this highly respected United States senator. He says, I, for one, think we ought to subpoena the White House. We need to know what the president knew, what the administration knew, and when they knew it. Does that sound familiar? Those of you who are old enough to remember Sam Ervin, and he says, so you determine up front that there are 22 PDBs, these are presidential daily briefings, in one stack and 300 in a second stack. And then the White House says, if you come in and play nice and say nice things to us, you'll be able to report back to the commission. And then maybe we'll take them under consideration with our lawyer whether some elements of the PDBs in the second stack can go in the first stack. I mean, come on. It's Nixonian in the approach, says Max Cleland. So that was last week. So what's the news now? Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, friends and neighbors, the news now, this on the 23rd of November, from United Press International, former Senator Max Cleland, a Democrat, has been nominated by President Bush. Now, this is a guy who's attacking Bush, right? Has been nominated by President Bush to serve on the board of the Export-Import Bank. Now, presumably, this is, you know, getting into commerce and trade issues, much juicier, much more power, more influence. It could be a good career path and probably very good pay. As a result, the UPI says, Max Cleland, he will have to leave the commission investigating the September 11 terror attacks. So the one guy on the commission who was speaking out, because the Republican who's the head of the thing has already caved in on this deal. And there are only two Democrats left, Tim Romer of Indiana, and we'll see how long he lasts, and Max Cleland, and Max Cleland just bit the dust. What is the White House hiding? What did the president know, and when did he know it? About 9/11. Increasingly, it is becoming obvious not only that this administration is trying to hide something, and aggressively and successfully hiding it. Nixon had to deal with the Washington Post raising the issue day after day after day as little dribs and drabs of information leaked out of the White House. This administration has made it clear
If you leak something like Joe Wilson did, talking about, hey, there's no uranium in Africa, we're going to nail your wife. We're gonna harm your family. They've made it clear they play for keeps. They're not going to do like Nixon and sit around and wring his hands and say, oh, no, get Spiro Agnew on talking about the press. It's the press. These nannery nanobs of negativism. No, they're not going to do that. Anybody who speaks out is doomed. Like Michael Jackson's lawyer the other day said on TV, you know, they're going to come down. We're going to come down on you like a ton of bricks. You won't know what hit you. And that's the word from Karl Rove and company as well. You know, the senior administration official. And it's mind-boggling. And
how many sources have you had as leaked information that you've exposed?
As George would say.
Probably none. I mean, this town is a... It's a town full of people who like to leak information.
Yeah, well, with certain exceptions. But, yeah, okay, so this is Bush's way of saying, well, yeah, somebody leaked that information about Valerie Plame, and, sure, it was a senior administration official, and, yeah, it might have been treason, it might be traitorous acts. It, you know, Ethel and Julius Rosenberg went to the electric chair for less than this, but, well... George says,
and I don't know if we're going to find out the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Right, just like he has no idea if the 9/11 Commission is going to, well, actually, I would say he does have a good idea what the 9/11 Commission is going to do between now and May, when they must disband in time for the elections. They're going to do nothing. They're going to read redacted reports, censored reports. It's going to be a joke. It's just absolutely going to be a joke. And then in the midst of this, we get Tommy Franks. General Tommy Franks, this from Newsmax.com, of all places. Of course, it came out of Cigar Aficionado magazine, the magazine for nicotine addicts. General Tommy Franks says that if the United States is hit with a weapon of mass destruction that inflicts large casualties, the Constitution will likely be discarded in favor of a military form of government. Writes Newsmax.com in an article headlined, General Franks doubts Constitution will survive WMD attack. In the magazine's December edition, the former commander of the military's Central Command warned that if terrorists succeeded in using a weapon of mass destruction against the U.S. or one of our allies, it would likely have catastrophic consequences for our cherished Republican form of government. Here's what Frank said, quote, it means the potential of a weapon of mass destruction and a terrorist massive casualty producing event somewhere in the Western world, it may be the United States of America, that causes our population to question our own constitution and to begin to militarize our country in order to avoid a repeat of another mass casualty producing event, which in fact then begins to unravel the fabric of our constitution. Two steps, very, very important. End of quote from Tommy Franks. Now, why is he saying this? And what would have Richard Nixon said? I'll tell you when we come right back. Stay tuned.
To create a real democracy in this country, we need to sit down and talk with other people. Democracy begins with conversation. But how do we begin the conversation? The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom has a 10-week study guide called Challenge Corporate Power, Assert the People's Rights, to help you get the conversation started in your community. It's free on the web at WILPF.org or call 215-563-7110.
Get the good. good stuff.
Right now would be a good time to come into Napa Auto Parts, because you can get a limited edition Napa number 15 race car hauler toy truck for just $29.99. It has an opening rear trailer door and separate buttons for engine sound, lights, and horn. This is the good stuff. And each race hauler comes with a Michael Waltrip 2003 Daytona 500 champion poster packed inside. So if you really want to impress the racing fans in your life, come to Napa.
Get the good stuff.
Napa. Get the good stuff.
When you purchase or refinance a home, the lender closing cost may add up to thousands of dollars. Well, at Ditech.com, we've cut our closing cost to just $395. It's called the Ditech One Fee. One low fee is all there is. No points or broker fee. The $395 Ditech One Fee. Why pay more? Log on to Ditech.com for terms and license disclosures or call 1-800-DITECH-1. That's 1-800-DITECH-1. Equal housing opportunity.
Would you like to know what the future holds? Call the psychic phone line today and talk with a real live psychic. Our psychics are fully licensed and guaranteed to know what the future holds. Just listen.
Hello, psychic phone line, may I help you?
Tell me what the future holds.
Good news.
I'll be rich and successful?
No, I just saved a bunch of money on my car insurance by switching to Geico.
See what you could save. Call 1-800-947-AUTO. Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% on car insurance.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
The Tom Hartman Show.
Adam, welcome to the Tom Hartman Program. What's up?
I just find it that you guys are really cynical to believe that Cheney or Bush or any of these guys would risk troop lives to make money. You must think that these guys are really evil people.
If you go back to 1998 and read the Project for a New American Century, what they were saying basically, if we're going to continue to consume 25% of the planet's oil, then our security is at risk if we can't secure our oil supplies. So we have to secure the oil supplies by seizing control of the Middle East.
Is this what you say they said, or is this what they have stated in a policy and in a
This is what they said.
Why is this on CNN every night?
It was on CNN a year ago. It was on CNN in 1998. They wrote a letter to Bill Clinton demanding that he attack Iraq, and that letter has been a public document ever since. And it was signed by all of these guys who are now in the administration.
The Tom Hartman Show, Monday through Friday, noon to 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Another audio clip from the production meeting. Doug Steffen.
What production meeting?
The drive. You know how many radio stations we're on? We must be doing something right, guys.
Imagine if we really tried.
Yeah.
If we don't care, and it shows.
Doug Steffen's Good Day.
On the IE America Radio Network.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on IE America Radio Network.
Bringing you uncommon sense, you're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Mm-hmm.
clean future by returning democracy to the United States of America. This is Tom Hartman on the IE America Radio Network. So here we have Tommy Franks, General Tommy Franks, saying that the democracy, that democracy in the United States is doomed if we get hit by a WMD attack. Is he saying that by way of warning? Is he saying, you know, look out, this is coming? You know, this could be a disaster for democracy? Well, it turns out, apparently not, you know, because, you know, he was saying on his watch, Bush would set aside the Constitution if this was to happen. And then they ask him, well, what do you think of Bush? And he says, well, as I look at President Bush, I think he will be ultimately judged as a man of extremely high character. He goes on to say, probably we'll think of him in years to come as an American hero. So this American hero last week was speaking in Colorado Springs. You probably saw it on TV. It was right before the Democratic debate, this photo op at Fort Carson, where George W. is standing up there and all the troops are yelling and screaming, and hey, yeah, yeah, yeah. In fact, they ended by chanting four more years. And Mike Litwin of the Rocky Mountain News showed up for this thing. He's a reporter. And he says, before the press was herded into the giant hangar in advance of George W. Bush's pep rally slash photo op with the Fort Carson troops, we were given the rules. No talking to the troops before the rally. No talking to the troops during the rally. No talking to the troops after the rally. In other words, if I've done my math right, that means no conversation at all, at least while on the base, with any soldiers. After all, who knows where that kind of thing could lead? Mike Litwin asks, rhetorically. The cameras went instead to Bush, who gave his speech standing in front of a huge American flag, thinks George C. Patton, in the opening scene of Patton, which, while dressed in an olive-green army jacket bearing a Fort Carson 7th Infantry Division insignia. Anyhow, this is what happened. What I'm suggesting is that this administration has descended into a Nixonian abyss, and that the good news is that Nixon didn't make it through. That ultimately democracy triumphed. Ultimately, people woke up and saw what was going on. And we don't have the Washington Post quite on our side this time. But there is a media out there. You see it all over the Internet. There are a lot of us speaking out. And we need to speak out more, and we need to speak out more loudly. We want to know what happened before 9/11. We want to know who leaked that information about Valerie Plame. We'd like to have some of the scandals in the White House uncovered now. Thank you very much. And then we can bring democracy back to America. Thanks for joining us today.